not the last meeting, but probably the last meeting that will enable us to debate the budget for the Department of Police together with the Civilian Secretariat and the IP on the 9th of May this year. I would therefore want to welcome the Secretariat and the members of the Portfolio Committee to this yet another important meeting. It's been a very long week, and we are appreciating the fact that we are here on a Friday to do our work. Just want to remind all of us about the objectives of the Civilian Secretariat. According to the act that we are self-processed and was signed into law by the President, the objects of the Civilian Secretariat are to exercise civilian oversight over the police service. They are to give strategic advice to the Minister in respect of developing and implementing policies. They are to provide administrative support services to the Minister to ensure South Africa's engagement with relevant international obligations. They are to liaise and communicate with stakeholders, to implement a partnership strategy to mobilize role players and stakeholders to strengthen service delivery by the police service to ensure the safety and security of communities, to implement, promote, and align the operations of the Civilian Secretariat in the national and provincial spheres of government, to coordinate the functions and powers of the Civilian Secretariat in the national and provincial spheres of government, to promote cooperation between the Civilian Secretariat, the Police Service, and the Directorate, and to provide guidance to community police fora and associated structures and facilitate their proper function. These are the objects of the Civilian Secretariat. The engagement that we are going to have here today basically should therefore speak to these objects. But also, I just want to draw the attention of members to the fact that this is an important organization in that it gives strategic advice to the minister in respect of developing and implementing policy. And we all know that according to the Constitution of the Republic, it is the minister who develops policies for the National Police Service. And this, therefore, is an important organization that can either lead us to what we want or lead us astray. It is in this spirit that I just want to make all of us aware that it's not just another hearing, but it's an important one. I therefore want to allow the Civilian Secretariat to take us through their presentation. We understand that there might still be some logistics that talk to them being able to have their own threat plans and so on and so forth. However, I must express the fact that we received this document last week. And I don't think that that gives us enough time to go through. And I want to believe that it cannot continue to happen. However, we are here now to hear from yourself so that we can engage after you have made your presentation. You are most welcome, and over to you. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just before we start, I think the documents were sent through before the Easter weekend. So I think Mr. Bassam has got a register on his computer of when they were sent, but they were sent through before the Easter weekend. I know the presentation was sent through initially, and 2 days later the other documents were sent through, but if the Chair would like to check this today, Mr. Bassam has got on his computer exactly when the documents were sent. However, in the next financial year, they will be tabled because we will be a designated department. You would be aware that the Civilian Secretariat for Police Act came into existence on the 1st of December with all clauses, with the exception of the designated department clause. What we have also done with our APPs and strat plans is we have asked the Auditor General to have a look at those strat plans so that they advise us for next year, so that, you know, on areas that they think we could tighten up on next year. So at the moment, the Auditor General is also going through our strat plan, not because they're required to, because they're not a designated department, but just to help us so that when we start planning our strat plan for next year, we make sure that our strat plan is our APPs are completely in line with that. But I think this is on the aid with your secretary, just to show you that they did go through before the Easter weekend.
Maybe I just want to clarify myself, because probably I was not clear enough. Indeed, we received your presentations well on time, but still during the constituency period. They were couriered to us, so we got them on. I'm talking about the presentation, got them well on time. We can't complain about it. However, I'm talking about your stress plan, your annual performance plan, those that were emailed to Zola, I should think, last week. That's what I'm actually referring to. Otherwise, the presentation, we got them well on time. It was during constituency period. They were able to courier them. We received them at that time. So I'm just clarifying myself now, because probably I was not clear enough.
I think, Chair, I'm talking about the presentation was sent through 2 days before the actual final APPs and strat plan. So there was a 2-day difference between the two being emailed. And if I'm correct, if I'm correct, both were before the Easter weekend. Mr. Son can actually check on his email. He's got the email on that. Okay. Just in terms of the other thing that we have done, Chair, and we have distributed it now in this meeting, the reason for not including it in the initial strat plans and APPs was because we were waiting for the Minister of Public Service and Administration to sign off on our final organisational structure. It was signed off by our Minister at the end of last year. In November, the Minister signed off on the new organisational structure for the Secretariat for Police. Unfortunately, it got delayed in the Office of the Minister of Public Service and Administration, but that has been signed off. And so we have distributed the final organisational structure. The reason why it was not in the document was because it hadn't at that point been signed off. Members of the committee would have seen, hopefully, that in the newspaper we have advertised the first 21 positions, but the structure will be increasing from 23 people from 53 people to 110 people. Within the National Security, and we have distributed that structure to everybody. We have advertised what we had said was that we would advertise first priority ones, and the weekend after it was signed off, the advertisements went out for the first 21 structures. We are hoping that by the end of June, the entire structure will be in place. Chair, so we have distributed that document to the Portfolio Committee. And the reason why, as I say, it wasn't in our presentation was because it had not been signed off by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Just in terms of our presentation, because last year the Portfolio Committee requested that we have more time to engage around the issue, we have tried to shorten our presentation, with the targets being in the actual documents that were circulated. So we're going to be speaking to the issues as opposed to the targets, which are in the document, just to give the Portfolio Committee a chance to engage with us, because of we don't have 3 or 4 days to discuss the document. Just to introduce the team, I think that on my my far left, people would know Mr. Demore, who is the head of our partnership unit, the chief director in terms of partnership unit. I think they would also know Ms. Kuwaiti, who is the head of our monitoring and evaluation unit, chief director in charge of our monitoring and evaluation unit. Ms. Omar joined us as head of our legislation unit. You will remember that Mr. Kenneth left and that we had an acting person. That person is now being redeployed to the Free State to actually develop the secretariat structure in the Free State. So we aren't really losing him as much as we said to be developing the secretariat in the Free State. And then behind me, Mr. Thurman, who is the director in charge of our support services, but was also doubling to do some of the legislation work pending the appointment of a chief director in terms of legislation. Mr. Suka, who's the head of our human resources, but we're still appointing the head of corporate services on the new structure. Renier, who is the head of our finance at the moment, but again, we are looking at appointing the CFO. Mr. Nawati, you would all know, he's our parliamentary liaison officer and minister of support. Nalatunde Mapia is there to assist with the minister of support. So that's the team from the secretariat. In terms of our strategic planning session, we basically, obviously, and I'm just looking at going forward now. Going forward with us becoming a designated department, we are going to have to align our strategic planning sessions with the requirements of Treasury and Parliament in terms of budgeting. So although we started our strategic planning in December, going forward we will be starting our strategic planning in June this year so that by August we have a draft with Treasury that we can discuss, etc. So that is something that we are going to have to focus on going forward, making sure that this year, by June, July, we're actually able to start that strategic planning session. So that because of being a designated department, that planning cycle changes quite significantly. The 2011 APPs and strategic plan were developed and submitted to Parliament last year prior to the enactment of the Civilian Secretariat for Police Act. So what we have tried to do in this year's strategic planning is not only to try and align it more with the Act, but also to make sure that our units start working as part of the same as part of one entity, instead of all running off doing their own programs. So you will see there's quite a link when we come to partnerships, for example. The issues that partnerships are going to focus on also speak to some of the issues that are coming up in policy and research. So, for example, the focus on trade unions and getting trade unions involved in processes relates to our approach in monitoring and evaluation and policy to actually encourage the unions to support us in the issues around professional policing. So it's not that partnerships will then just go off and develop its own structure. So we've tried to align the different units to each other. So what will happen with policy and research when they present it, that they will be focusing on certain policy issues that are required, but also picking up on policy issues that arise out of the MNE processes or the oversight processes that happen within the police, so that we don't have different chief directorates working in isolation from each other. So that's one of the things we wanted to try and do with the APPs for this year. In terms of the implementation of the Act, as we mentioned, the Act was ascended to by the President in December 2011. With the exception of the designated department clause, which no date was set, but our target for that date would be the next financial year. When we submitted to the President, it says on the date determined by the President, we initially wanted to put 2013-14 financial year, but the advice from the President was to then send through another enactment for that date, but our target is still the 13th-14th, so the next financial year, April, to become a designated department. And we've been involved in quite extensive discussions with Treasury around that process. the process of implementation of the Act. As I mentioned, the organizational structure was approved by our minister in November. It was finally approved by the Minister of Public Service and Administration at the end of March, and it was so that structure is now finally approved, and we have provided you with a copy of it. What the importance of the structure is, I think that it capacitates us in order to be able to fulfil the objectives that the Secretary spoke to, but also a key focus on also developing our financial and corporate services in order to become a designated department in the next financial year. In discussions that we have had with the Minister of Police, we have agreed that we will review the structure after 18 months to see whether it is adequate. It was a discussion that we had with both Public Service and Administration and ourselves. And then subsequently with the minister, that after 18 months after becoming a designated department, there is approval to review that structure and see whether in fact we have the necessary capacity. And Treasury, DPSA, and ourselves have committed to that process because we didn't want to implement a bloated structure and then have people that just sit around not performing. We'd rather. And when we advertise, we've gone through a very rigorous process where anybody at an SMS level who is appointed will have to go to. There's a assessment that's done by Deloitte and Touche, which is done for some government departments, where they actually do a very rigorous one-day assessment of that person before the final appointment, and that particularly with people from external people that you're appointing, where they might interview well, but you're not sure whether they're going to be the right person for the position. The anticipation, as I said, is that the Civilian Secretariat for Police will become a designated department on the 1st of April 2013. The provincial secretaries are, in terms of the Act, to be established in July 2013. And just to give you some feedback on that, we have had extensive discussions with all the provinces around this, and in particular, the Gauteng province already has a secretariat. The process now is just aligning that secretariat and aligning their APPs. Four other provinces are already leading the way, and we have been engaging with them and part of workshops with them, and that is Limpopo, KwaZulu-Natal, and Mpumalanga and the Eastern Cape. Those four provinces have been extremely proactive in the process of developing developing their structures at a provincial level, and we've been participating with them in workshops and discussions with them around the alignment. In terms of the going forward and the way in which we are required to structure the Civilian Secretariat for Police, you will see in the APP's document that we have broken the structure of the Civilian Secretariat for Police down into different programs: administration program, partnership program, policy and research program, legislation program, monitoring and evaluation program, and the administration program would include both the finance, the corporate services, and the Office of the Secretary of Police. In terms of the Office of the Secretariat of Police, one of the key roles is to ensure an effective and efficient secretariat that's able to fulfill its mandate, which includes strategic planning, annual performance plans, budget alignment with APP and strategic plans. And we have distributed on Wednesday a further breakdown of our budget to all members. We are now having quarterly meetings to actually review how the spending on that budget is going, but linking that to what is being achieved in terms of the APP. The effective implementation of the new organizational structure. I think that growing from 53 to 110, a significant amount of energy is going to be spent on making sure we get the right people for the right position. The performance management system is something which over the last 2 years, we've spent quite a lot of time on developing effective performance management systems so that we can actually use those as a management tool. Effective communication and alignment with provinces, and I've spoken about where we are at in terms of the different provinces, but I think that the HOD forum, we haven't as yet established the secretariat forum that is required in the Act, because most provinces have not got secretariats at this point. But we have established quite a dynamic heads of department forum, and we have representation from, I think, 8 of the 9 provinces are consistently represented by their HODs in that process. Strategic and technical advice provided to the minister, and that includes issues on international cooperation, etc. One of the things that we are doing at the moment with the Interpol section of SAP is to look at reviewing not only the agreements that are in place, and the fact that very often the agreements that we have, the international agreements that we have, are not something which necessarily has been initiated by ourselves, but often are at the request of those countries. So they become agreements, but they're not really, what do we do about those agreements, and how are we utilizing those agreements effectively? So we are currently with Interpol reviewing that, but we also, as part of that, are also reviewing what is our international obligations, and that includes SAPS's international obligations and the travel that is taking place internationally within SAPS, and what are we benefiting out of that. So we have, jointly with the SAPS Interpol section, started to look at what benefit are we getting from our international cooperation, and where should our focus be around international cooperation, because I think the Portfolio Committee would be well aware that there are a huge number of international trips taken by SAPS, but what is the benefit of those trips? At the moment, what we are doing is we're going through all the reports of those trips, which is a huge number, and looking at, was this a useful trip? What has happened after that trip? And we're doing the same with our cooperation agreements, around our cooperation agreements, and we're hoping that by the end of the second term, we would actually be able to look at some sort of policy on our approach to international cooperation, and that's being handled directly from our office. Effective implementation of a communication strategy. We have developed a communication strategy, and you'll see in our APPs now we are looking at rolling out of that strategy. A key component of that strategy is our communication with SAC, and getting SAC to understand exactly what the Civilian Secretariat for Police is, what its regulations are, what its powers are, etc., so that you don't have a situation where the Civilian Secretariat for, where somebody phones you and you phone them and you say you're the Secretary of Police, and they say you're the Secretary to who? And so we are engaging with SAC. You'll see, we would be happy to give you a copy of that, of that communication strategy, but you'll see that it focuses on getting the public to understand the role of the Secretariat for Police. It focuses on our key communications with our stakeholders. It focuses on our, when Mr. Zemore presents on the partnership, on the campaign and where communications will come in to the public campaign we're looking at. It also focuses on other government departments understanding the role of the Civilian Secretariat for Police, and then SAPS, a big focus on SAPS understanding the mandate and the role of the Civilian Secretariat for Police. And not necessarily spending a lot of money on pamphlets and posters, etc., but using existing media, mediums such as poll TV, training that takes place within SAPS to make sure that people in the police are sufficiently aware. We also, with the structure growing from 53 to 110, need to make sure that we have an effective internal communication strategy in place, and that we actually have a proper process where instructions, as opposed to general news, are actually properly understood within the Secretariat for Police. Because if we're saying that that's a problem in SAPS, we can't be repeating that mistake. In terms of timeous and accurate reports submitted to the Minister of Peace on areas of oversight and policy, that is something which is an ongoing area that the Civilian Secretariat for Police focuses on. But I also want to just point out at this point that if one looks at the Act, one of the requirements of that Act is that we on a quarterly basis submit a report to Parliament. Now, the Act came into existence on the 1st of January, so the first quarter ended at the end of March. So we will, at the end of April, beginning of May, be submitting to Parliament our first quarterly report on the Civilian Secretariat for Peace, which will cover in more detail some of the oversight functions that we've done, some of the policy areas that we have been focusing on, which the Portfolio Committee may not be aware of. And other government department engagement through the JCPS cluster. We are very actively involved at this point with the Development Committee of the JCPS cluster, where our chief directorate sit on the Development Committee of the JCPS cluster, but we also have been requested to join the DG forum of that cluster so that we are able to make input into that. I'm then going to hand over to the Chief Director of Partnerships to just take us through their area.
Chairperson, thank you. Another member, good morning. The main focus for this year, honourable members, the first area we are going to deal with, as the Secretary indicated, particularly with the civic organizations and the political union. Thank you. The main focus would be on strengthening agreements with the civic organizations and the police union. And also, sometimes in the second quarter, we hope to launch an anti-crime campaign. The main objective of this anti-crime campaign is to bring about public awareness, firstly, of the second-hand goods. And we're also going to link it then with the campaign working together with the civic organization to try and discourage the public to buy stolen goods. And we hope that that will also contribute to strengthening the moral fiber of society. The other aspect is the normal work of involving the public, that is public participation programs. We are also, honorable members, going to implement the guidelines on the CPF. Two provinces have already agreed that we should start with them in terms of piloting that implementation, that is KZN and Gauteng. With regards to CSF, we are at the level now where we are cascading it down to provinces, and we will be establishing facilitation forums, and those facilitation forums will then help to establish CSF at local level. We are also, honourable members, going to be implementing the small business, anti-crime small business robbery strategy. On that program, we are working with the BAC as well as the SAP, and we will involve other departments, in particular the local government, SAR, and trade and industry. With regard to that specific program, also we need to have some agreements with the small business organizations. Although that area, honorable members, is not very well organized, but some of the big businesses have got a desk. The difficulty is whether that desk in a big business environment would be sufficient to be critically aware of the issues that affect small business. The other area of focus, honorable members, is the implementation of the rural safety strategy. We'll be engaging with communities to see how effective is that strategy, and also to get input from them as to how we can improve both the theoretical aspect of that as well as the practical implementation by the police. That would be all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, just to add three things quickly to Mr. Zeman's presentation. One is that the small business robbery strategy has been finalized. It's just basically, we're just going through the final consultation, people involved in the consultation during the strategy. But we are now going through the final consultation. And there's some quite exciting stuff coming out of that. For example, one of the things we're looking at piloting in Tembisa is a cash management process where small businesses are able to better manage their cash using a system that was used in big business. The details for security reasons are not necessarily available, but using a system that big business has implemented but could be applicable to small business and has been done in other countries around the world. It's a technology solution at no cost to the department at all. That is being driven by some of the banks, etc., are looking at funding. But it also looks at general cash management of small businesses, registration of small businesses, etc. So I think that we're hoping going forward that will be quite an exciting strategy. On the CPF, we finalized the draft policy document, which, as Mr. Zemo said, if two provinces are busy piloting. We basically are about to re-engage the board, because during this process the board has been consulted on more than four occasions. But it has not been an easy process, because even when we did international research on the area, there are no blueprints for CPFs anywhere around the world. Everybody's had kind of problems, but nobody's come up with the kind of blueprint. So we're hoping that this will, but it certainly does limit, focus the CPS on policing as opposed to general issues. With regard, and that will, the responsibility for that implementation will be for the provinces. We provide the guidelines and we'll monitor the implementation. So you'll see in our APPs we talk about 9 forums, that each province must have a forum that then rolls out those guidelines. With regard to the CSF, we basically developed the policy, the implementation plan, and are just now developing a monitoring tool. Again, there's been extensive discussions with SAGA and the provinces, and SAGA and the provinces will jointly be responsible for the rollout of the CPS, and we are developing a monitoring tool to monitor how that rollout takes place. I think then I'll just hand over to our head of monitoring and evaluation.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. We basically had to reorganise the M&E unit in order for us to be able to, you know, exercise efficient and effective oversight over the SAPS. Now, the first key strategic area that we'll be looking into in this current financial year is to monitor and evaluate the performance and efficiency of the South African Police Service. And that we will do by, you know, compiling reports based on the station visits. Now, these reports comprise of reports that are coming from provinces and also based on the visits that are conducted by National. And basically, then we will then be looking at the trends at a national basis and then provide that feedback to the minister. We also want to look at how SAPS manages its performance, and a review is will be conducted in the current financial year, and that will look into the performance chart. It will look into the indicators and targets that are being set and how SEPS is meeting those. And the second area will obviously be looking at how SEPS is utilizing its budget. We presented a report to the minister based on the finance, on the expenditure of the SAPS for the last financial year. So some of the key findings that the portfolio committee has raised with the SAPS, we have raised them with the minister, and basically SAPS is now required to provide a plan as to how they're going to address most of the key findings that we have raised with the SAPS National Management Forum. The second area we'll be looking at monitoring police conduct, integrity, and the transformation of the service. And in that area, we will then be looking at how SAPS manages its complaints. We will be looking at the implementation of recommendations, that is from the IPIT, the Auditor General, SCOPA, and from the Portfolio Committee. We also want to look at how, you know, SAPS undertakes the training. The process has started. We are looking at the basic training curriculum and assessing the implementation thereof. And we also were engaged in a process where we looked at how SAPS manages its disciplinary processes, and that report is in the process of being finalized, and it will be presented to the minister. That was a joint effort with the secretariat, between the secretariat and the South African Police Service. We also want to look at how SAPS manages its litigation process, and again, that report will be then presented to the minister. The next area is looking at how SAPS complies, you know, in terms of the implementation of legislation. And in that area, we will be monitoring the implementation of DVA through DVA audits that we'll be conducting. And that also would look into, you know, the implementation of the Sexual Offences Act and the Child Justice Act. And as we know, this is a task that is now with the secretariat. So we will be then providing those reports to Parliament biannually on the implementation of the DVA. We also want to look at how SAPS is monitoring the Firearms Control Act and also the Second Hand Goods Act. And basically also on how SAPS implements policy directives. The policy unit develops policies, so our role is basically to ensure that, you know, SAPS is monitored in terms of the implementation of those policies. And the other area, focus area we've introduced is to monitor the effectiveness and impact of the effectiveness and impact of SAPS programs. And this will be purely a focus on evaluations. We are required by, you know, government to ensure that programs are evaluated on a 5-yearly basis. So this new area will mainly focus on evaluations, be it impact, be it process, be it implementation evaluations within the SAPS. And for the current financial year, we want to look at training. We want to basically complete that exercise, the recruitment processes, and discipline management within the SAPS. And also be able to do a thorough evaluation of the National Inspectorate as to whether is it achieving the objectives that it intended to, because it's been existing for quite a long time. Now the next area would be then to strengthen MNE cap- capacity within national and provincial offices, and that we will then do by ensuring that we have partnerships that are established. We already have a reference group, an MNE reference group, so we will continue with convening that reference group. And we also have established a DVA compliance forum between the SAPS and ourselves. And the purpose of the compliance forum is basically to review the reports that will be then submitted to Parliament. In essence, we will then be submitting one report to Parliament that is compiled by both the SAPS and the Secretariat for Police. We will continue convening the MNE forum and develop products that we will be using nationally to monitor and evaluate the SAPS. And we also will be establishing new technical teams. We have two technical teams currently that we're working with in some of the areas. And we also then are planning to deliver training on oversight. This is through the VES program, which started last year, so we will then be rolling out that program this year. The curriculum is being finalized, and we're planning to roll it out to provinces in the current financial year. The last area is to ensure that all our work is informed, or all the information that we generate is warehoused in the form of a database. And the key output for this current financial year in that area is that we'll then be developing a data warehouse, which will then comprise of all the tools that we are currently using. And because at the moment we have an internal system which was developed in house, but the plan is that we should have a data warehouse which would then comprise of different databases that will talk to the various projects that we are undertaking within the unit. The last area is to implement any special projects that are being allocated either by the Secretary or the Minister of Police. Thank you.
Okay, just before going on to MNE, I just want to add on to policy, just a couple of areas. So one is on the complaints issue. If you remember when we debated the Act, one of the issues was that SACs must take responsibility for the management of complaints, and our role should be to oversee how SACs is doing that. It's not working. At this point, my office is having to handle complaints directly, and it's not the best way of handling it because we're dependent on SACs for that. So what we, but in the absence of SACs not being able to manage those effectively, we kind of in the middle at the moment on that issue. So we're having to kind of, but what we need to do is through the SAP forum that we set up is to set up a proper system and look at how fast the system around complaints works. That's the one thing. The second thing is that just for the portfolio committee's awareness, we have basically on the budget, we're working very closely with Treasury so that on a quarterly basis we can look at SAP's budget and be able to provide input. And I think the issue that Melissa raised about going to tax and presenting what the findings on the budget were, I think one of the things is to say that they're clearly not monitoring their own budget on a regular basis, and that's what we need to be putting in place. The second thing is that on our reports, we have basically established a process. First of all, the Secretariat is now attending the National Management Forum of SACs to be able, that takes place, so that we're able to see what are they doing about some of the issues that we're raising. The second thing is that we did present three reports, and when we present the report to the Portfolio Committee,
There will be a breakdown of those reports when we present our quarterly report. It was on budget spending, provisioning, SAS 13 stores, and firearms management in SAS. And I think it was the first time ever that, as a result of those reports, a senior management meeting was called within the entire management of SAS. All divisional commissioners, provincial commissioners, deputy national commissioners were called to come and deal with what was in those reports. And they have been tasked with, on certain areas, they've been tasked to implement the recommendations. On other areas, they've been given a certain period of time to come back to us with the turnaround strategy. So I think that for the first time ever, I think that those reports are not just reports that then just sit on desks. They're actually being presented to SACs, and SACs are being asked to respond to those reports. And the same applies to the DVA. The point of our compliance forum with SACs is that at the end of the day, it's not really good enough for us to be able to present the portfolio committee with a report, but nothing happens in SACs to rectify it. So the point of the compliance forum around the DVA is that these issues must be raised with SACs, and SACs must tell us how they're going to address the issues that we've raised, that we raised in the DVA report, and rectify those issues, be they registry issues or whatever the case may be. Just the last thing is on the data warehousing. I think the portfolio would be aware when we presented at, I think, at our annual report, we said there was a problem with that database, and we were looking at CETA, and the portfolio committee requested us to come back to them as to whether CETA was going to be capable to implement this database. They're not capable. So they sent us a thing that said that they had an indefinite end date for the implementation of this data warehousing that Millicent is talking about. So we have taken a decision that we will go out on tender, rather, and get somebody in to do it, obviously following the proper processes. What has happened then in the meantime is what the listener has referred to, is we have set up our own in-house, just using existing computer systems, at least to be able to deal with the data as it comes in at the moment. So that just for those areas of clarity before I hand over to the Policy and Research Unit.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. In terms of the Chief Director of Policy and Research, our purpose is to provide policy advice and research services to the Secretary of Police. We have five strategic objectives. The first one is to develop and implement research programs on policing, crime, safety and security issues. And in this regard, we're going to be conducting research into specific areas of policing. My colleague mentioned the National Police Inspectorate. We're going to be looking at the policies and national instructions, and essentially to ensure that they perform effectively. We're also looking into specialized policing areas, and in this regard, we look at international best practices to determine what the best approach for the SAPs and the country. We're also looking into the use of technology within the SAPs, and the money that we're spending on technology. We're going to be looking at SAPs communication strategies and how these are implemented. We look at the national instructions, the standing orders and regulations. And we've already started our project on the training of the police, basic police training. And here we're looking at the training institutions. We're looking at the curriculum of 2010 and how that was implemented. And then we also look at the impact of these institutions and the training curriculum at police station level. We're going to be conducting research to complement the MNE findings, that's in terms of the resource allocation guide of the SAP and the detective training. And then we'll also be conducting other research identified by our MNE unit and our partnerships unit. And we're going to provide the Secretary with two reports a year on crime and policing trends. And we'll provide research in the areas that need addressing in terms of the SAP Act. The other strategic objective is to provide policy advice on policing issues to the Secretary. And here our outputs are ensuring a finalized and approved white paper, working with the MNE unit in the development of litigation policies. We're going to develop policy on any other areas identified by the Secretary. We will work with the MNE unit on key issues based on recommendations. And we'll identify and develop policy on specific areas referring to it coming out of the white paper. The next strategic objective is to engage stakeholders with the view of improving research capacity within the Secretariat. In this regard, we've already established the reference group with civil society. We are going to continue with engagement with them. We have quarterly meetings. We will be setting up a forum with the provincial secretariat as well as the police in order to feed into ongoing research and policy issues. Our next objective will be to position the secretariat as an information hub on issues of policing and to enable the secretariat to improve the quality of research and policy. And here we're going to expand the work of the resource center to include collecting of information relating to policing that is dealt with in Parliament. We're going to become a repository of all research being conducted in policing in South Africa. We will access historical research that is being done by the police or any other external role players like NGOs. We'll access information on best practices into policing internationally. We'll also act as a repository for all research reports prepared by the secretariat. And we'll provide the secretary with current and historic information on specific areas of policing as requested. We will create a platform for information sharing amongst different units within the secretariat, and we're going to keep a database of all legislation, instructions, standing orders with regard to policing. And in terms of the last objective, we will provide strategic research support to the secretary by conducting research identified by the secretary. Thank you.
Just 2 points before the legislation issue. The white paper has been finalized. Provinces have made their input. We extended the date of input for provinces. We are just involving now in the intergovernmental consultation before we table it in cabinet. So we are hoping to table it in cabinet during May so it can be presented to you. The DNA policy is basically being finalized. It's just being consulted at the moment before it is tabled in June to the Port Pregnant Committee. But we have finalized the policy. We basically had extensive discussions with the people that participated in the Port Pregnant Committee's overseas trip. We used a lot of the information from the report that the Port Pregnant Committee provided to us, and we are just busy consulting on the finalized draft of that policy. In terms of legislation, before I start on legislation, maybe I should say that I know that there has been quite a lot of criticism from the Portfolio Committee on our late delivery of legislation. And we accept that that has been a problem. You would have noticed in the advert that went out, one of the key positions that has been advertised is the Chief Director for Legislation. At the moment, what's happening is our head of support services is having to double and do that legislation. So it's crucial that that legislation unit, in order to be able to keep to our parliamentary program in terms of legislation, is established. And in order to fill these positions, we're doing interviews on Saturdays because of time constraints. We basically are sitting on Saturdays doing interviews because we don't want to delay the processes of appointments. But in terms of the key outputs of the legislation, the directorate and the secretariat, the first is to establish and implement the legislative directorate, and that we are hoping that by the end of May that we will have finished the processes internally by the end of April, and that by the end of May the person would be able to start work. The legislation on the review of the SAS Act that's been tabled in Parliament. Obviously, next week there's the deliberations, but one of the issues for us is the finalisation of that. The regulations for the Civilian Secretariat for Police have been drafted. We've drafted them, and just to say a bit about those legislations, although what we have found in the last 3 months, and particularly since the Act came into existence, some of the issues that we raised with the Portfolio Committee about access to information within SAT have resolved themselves. We don't have a problem anymore with accessing information in SAS. However, we don't want a situation where we go back again to that situation because it could be based on personality. So in our regulations, we are putting that in so that access to information is very clearly spelled out in the Act, so that we're not dependent on if the head of SAS changes and it all moves around and different positions in SAS change. We dependent on the personalities. we need it to be in regulations. So those regulations will be tabled with the portfolio committee by the beginning of May. The shared service agreements with SAFTA, what we are planning to do is that we've had lengthy discussions with Treasury and SACS. We have set up a joint team between ourselves, SACS, and National Treasury to look at certain shared services agreements when we become a designated department, and there will be legally binding documents put in place. The approval and enactment of the Dangerous Weapons Act, we basically published the Dangerous Weapons Act last year for comment. We got more than 600 public comments on that Dangerous Weapons Act. We've been sitting with the state law advisors, re-looking at our approach. We felt that maybe our approach to the Dangerous Weapons Act was a bit draconian. So we have reworked it. We're hoping that by the end of next week we would have a final bill to be tabled in Parliament. But I think that we've had to review our approach to the Dangerous Weapons Act. The legislation on the Firearms Amendment Act, we have finalized those amendments. They are busy being consulted with gun owners and gun-free and all the different stakeholders. And then there is the full SAT Amendment Act, which we would be looking at tabling at the end once the white paper process is finalized. In terms of our human resource development and management, obviously a key factor in our success is the effective implementation of our organizational structure. That at the moment we've been asking people to often punch above their weight. So for example, our head of finance has done a really good job, but has had to almost operate as a CFO. Our support person, as I mentioned, is also doubling his legislation. So for us to be effective, the effective implementation of the organizational structure is important. And what we're very clear on is we do not just want bums on seats. We want people that can deliver in this process. Effective human resource development management plan, including effective skill placing and development. What we've been doing over the last 6 months is also looking at whether we've correctly placed some of the people who are existing in the secretariat, because we found that sometimes the person may not be performing in an area because they're badly placed. So we've been looking at our placement. human resource capacity and ready to perform the requirements of a designated department. As you will see on the organizational structure under our corporate services, the human resource capacity will be beefed up quite significantly. In terms of our supply chain management, that is an area which we really have to get up and fully functional. You know, at the moment it's been a bit easier for us because although we've been 100% compliant, SACS will do a lot of that procurement for us, and that's not something we want to see going forward. So the beefing up of that supply chain management, I think over the last 6 months, we have basically developed more than 11 policies on specific areas related to human resource development and supply chain management, policies where there were just gaps not in place, including basic issues like use of cell phones, disposal of assets, etc. And one of the things that we have also started to do and that we need to continue to do is to review and sanitize our supplier database. One of the things that we have picked up in the secretariat is that at the moment our databases, the database of suppliers is housed with SAT. What we found is that in the secretariat we were spending a huge amount of money using middlemen. So what would happen is you would order something through a middle person. So instead of ordering it directly from the supplier, and in some instances what we found when we were checking some of our financial submissions that came through for signature, is that those middlemen were putting between 300% onto the cost of the item. So just to give you an example, on cleaning equipment, a bottle of Mr. Min, which cost 15 rand in the shop, would be costing us 68 or 17 or 70 rand. And we said this was unacceptable. We then consulted with Treasury, and Treasury were clear that the use of middlemen is not appropriate. That yes, we need to look at BEE issues, but that middlemen are not the route to go, and that if we're going to be doing haircuts, that's one of the areas where we could do that. So we have started to develop our own database of suppliers, which are BEE compliant, but which don't necessarily involve middlemen, because we believe that that is a ridiculous expenditure cost. And then obviously the shared service agreement with SAP speaks predominantly to issues of support in the area of finances and supply chain management. We are upgrading our financial management system, which enables our ability to be able to each unit to receive a monthly financial statement of how they're spending, what their spending patterns are, to be able to assess their spending patterns, and to ensure the Secretariat has the necessary procedures, processes, policies, and systems in place to be in full compliance with the designated department. We have set up a joint team with the Auditor General's Office and National Treasury to look at all the compliance issues, our asset registers, all the issues which normally result in departments getting qualified audits. We want to anticipate those areas up front. Obviously, in terms of our auxiliary services, approved policy and file plans in place, our updated registry and archive system. I think that we have updated our registry, but I think that to be seriously efficient, we need to make sure that our registry, because that's where information comes in and delays can sometimes occur within government departments, that our registry system is able to operate optimally. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. We are going to allow members to ask questions. Honorable Colapana, Honorable Lekhetso, Honorable Anelu, in that order. Thank you, Chair. I understand your HR constraints in relation to legislation, but it is something you're charged with, and I think we do need an explanation as to why it took over a year for the response to the Genesis judgment to come to the committee. You know, that judgment was on the 17th of March last year, and that found that the legislation passed by this committee without, I hasten to add my vote, was unconstitutional. Now, it's taken like a year for that to be tabled in Parliament, and you've left us with no option but to sit literally night after night. It's an unseemly dash to get this hassle through so that Parliament's not found to be in contempt of the Constitutional Court. Now, the submissions that we've received, and I've gone through them briefly, are all saying many of them, I've seen that all of them have, are saying that this may well be inconsistent with the Glenister judgment. I think it needs intense debate, and I don't know that we're going to be doing the bill justice in the little time, literally minuscule amount of time that we have, and I'm very fearful that this committee is going to face the humiliation of having the Constitutional Court throw it back in our faces. That can't happen a second time. So I'd like to know, and I understand, you've literally got skeleton staff still in that area. Was it not possible to pull in legal advisors, pull in other staff, do something to get this to us at the end of last year? Because really it's left us in an untenable position. Look, I think it's really been excellent to see that we have a representative of yours accompanying us now on our oversight visits to the provinces. Could you tell us in the long run what the benefits are going to be to us, to SAT, to whoever, in relation to having a representative of yours on those trips? You spoke of a report on the SAT litigation process. And I think that's way overdue. I really do. Look, we're looking at each year a fifth of the SAT budget set aside for contingent liabilities, and I'm hoping that the report will come before this committee as soon as possible. I understand it was going to the minister, but I'm hoping it will then come to us so we can work through it. Because under the last head of the SAS Legal Services, now she was found, they spent 8 million rand on the Edward Sonnenberg report, who said she knows nothing about the law. And under her, things just crumbled. I mean, they were down to dealing with 4% of the cases in a year. So the backlog was huge. And there was something of a culture that has now been installed in that department of challenging and appealing, even when it is so obvious that two SAS members have raped a woman in their truck. They will appeal and appeal and appeal till the victim is so terrorized by this mounting bill that they back off. And then SAS would say, you see, we were innocent all along. And it's a lie, when they should be groveling on their hands and knees and apologizing. So I'm hoping that will come, that will be one of the areas that you focus on, that you could advise us on how the situation has been improved. The issue on the complaints, and I know it's very difficult. I mean, when you have staff who won't do a job, and a station who are recalcitrant and not interested in dealing with a mourning family whose loved one's been murdered, they won't get feedback, they literally are rude. You can't take it to the ISIS, so sorry, that leaves you and your skeleton stop. So I don't know where else one can go, and I'm sure it's not only me who's coming to you. I know I try not to come too often to you, but when I hit a brick wall, I have to. And I know it's we're in this bizarre position of who else do we go to, because of the ISIS, that capacity has been removed by the Act, and quite rightly so, but that leaves you. And then two other things. You said you put before the DNA policy by June. Where is the legislation? How far is it? It'll be a year since we did the trip, and people are now agitating and have been agitating for months. Where is it? You obviously don't want to do it. You know, they don't understand you're writing 1,000 other reports and doing 10 other pieces of legislation. They just think you're sitting at home having tea. And we, of course, do nothing. So if we could have a date or some day where I can say to these blasted people, it's going to be tabled in this month. And then they'll say, there we are, at least they're doing something. Finally, we had it revealed to us yesterday and the day before that there's a problem that's been forced upon the SAPs, and that the Treasury's ordered it to shed 9,000 members. They explained that 5,000 people disappear through natural attrition each year, so they need to hire 5,000. They have been forbidden to do that. They may take on 1,200 people. So until such time as they've dropped 9,000 members. Now, it was explained to us this is going to have a huge impact on the implementation of the legislation. For example, the DNA legislation, they will need to bring in, and they had it all planned to hire 800 experts here and another, but they're highly qualified people. That's all on the back burner. It's gone. So I would suggest perhaps that you meet with a matter of urgency with SAS top structure to try and perhaps tailor what you're doing in forms of legislation to what their ability now is, because it has been massively curtailed by this decision by Treasury, which has specifically targeted staff, not other things, parties and all the rest. They've targeted this staff and said, you will scrap this lot. So they're in between a rock and a hard place. And I fear that what you're doing may also, it may have a huge impact on what you're proposing in terms of legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Let me thank the presentation. The Civilian Secretary for Police Act of 2011 was legislated and ascended to by the President in 2011. The Act was put into operation the 1st December 2011. How do you communicate? How do you market your product to the communities? What have you done so far in making the communities aware that you are there, alive and kicking? You are talking also here to the effective implementation of CPF policy guidelines in province. yesterday when we were meeting with the folks, they talked a lot about the secretariat taking over. What do you mean by effective implementation of CPF? Can you detail that? Yes, supply chain management. You say that you will ensure secretariat has the necessary procedure, and you say by January 2013. And the rest there, they are not dates, like review and sanitize supply processes, database, or procurement. There are no dates. So it's an open thing that... please, can you explain this discrepancy? Then you say January 2013. The rest, you don't have those times. Thanks, sir.
Apologies for technology failing me. Jefferson, yes, thanks for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. The first one I want to start with is the fact that this draft plan is only a 3-year draft plan, while it should be a 5-year draft plan. And can you explain to us why that is so? I mean, it's supposed to be 2010 to 2014, if I remember, if I think correct. Second issue, Jefferson, it's very difficult in terms of the budget. That we don't have your middle and your outer year indications as well. Because it's not indicating to us what we can expect in terms of growth and what we can expect in terms of delivery. Now, it is supposed to be that way. That's the way it's supposed to be done. So we're supposed to actually see what was, what is, what is coming, and what will be the outer year. And therefore, also the five-year planning plan, so that one can see that it's actually in the long term address those issues. And I really think this must be the last time that the Secretariat get away with this, because we really need to have those things. It's not possible for us to make this complete evaluation. When we look at budgets, we're also not looking at just what's happening now. We're also looking at what was and what's coming. So that is the one issue that I want to raise. You talked about the establishment and the alignment to some extent of the provincial secretaries. Again, and I want to agree with the Honourable Lekgetho, that we do need to have target dates, even for those as well. It's not good enough to say 100% to be achieved. That's what your targets say. But you literally, I'm not sure whether you're going to achieve that in this year, given the fact that it's only costing currently, as you've explained to us, that it's ready. You're moving towards the free state. That still leaves you with 7 other provinces. And we all know that there are going to be challenges in some provinces more so than in others. So I do believe, Jefferson, this speaks to the implementation of the Act itself as well. And I do believe we need to get clarity. And like we've asked SAPS to provide us with action plans on certain issues, I think we need to get an action plan on that as well. You did indicate that you no longer have the problems in terms of the 4 reports that you were supposed to deliver last year on SAPS performance. You no longer have that problems with SAPS. It would be because the Act allows you to do this, I would hope also that your personnel would assert themselves in terms of these things so that we don't see a repetition of it. Because SAPS, as a big an organization it is, and we've seen them doing it with other departments, will easily, in future, depending on personalities, again say to you, no, we're not going to give you access. No, we're not going to do that. I mean, we experience it as members of parliament sometimes at stations, asking for information that they would still say no until you assert yourself that you really do want that information. Do you have MOUs in place with SAPS? I am also worried, Jefferson, about, and we related with IPED as well. We do not believe that neither IPED nor yourself
have given clear indications of your, that is required according to the IPED Act, of your meetings, your forums, etc. And I think that is a shortcoming in your stand plan insofar as that is concerned. Around the monitoring of complaints, yes, you are not the post office and you shouldn't become the post office. Until you have established with SAS a workable and enforceable way of dealing with complaints, this is going to remain so. And I do believe that this committee would need, in future, a briefing on how you're going to solve this issue. Because for me, Chairperson, it's not that difficult an issue. There are national instructions in such a regarding police complaints. The question now is, how do we manage that those complaint registers that are at police stations and which should be the domain of the station commander, how do those complaints get addressed and how do you get feedback that it has been addressed or how do you monitor that it's adequately been addressed? See, this is another issue I want to raise with the Secretary, a question that I want to ask him. I was disgusted, to say the least, with the reaction that we received from SAS in terms of the firearms turnaround plan. First of all, denying that they are still backlogs, while we know because we see it at police stations that they are still backlogs. Secondly, not knowing the difference between the renewal process and the new application, and that's from the people who are supposed to be managing this process. Now, I sit on that task team, and I'm feeling almost to the point that we've wasted our time. If SAS is not going to take this thing seriously and is not going to address it, we're going to, within a year, again sit with the same problem. Part of your responsibilities as Secretary is to make sure that these things are happening. What are you doing? You told us relationships, problems, or something of the past. Then what is it that you are doing as the oversight body to see to it that this is actually happening? I'm glad to hear that we are going to get reports. That's good. I think it's very important. I still feel, Chairperson, that the Secretariat is not fully playing its role like it should play in terms of the interaction with this committee as well. I would have thought that the Secretariat should have been one of those organizations when we had the workshop on the budget who should have come to the committee and said to us, this is our feeling around such budget. We asked other people to come, and we raised with you last year as well, that the Secretariat, and you, it's one of your points that you've put in as well as that your role in terms of such budget. But we would like to see a more proactive role in terms of that. And my question is, in regard to this, what is your role? You've got it on there. What is your role in terms of substance? Is it to influence? Are you influencing it? I mean, they did say to us, the Acting National Commissioner said to us, that for the first time, they've also consulted with the Secretariat in terms of the annual performance plan, the stress plan of themselves. But that process should start in June of the previous year already, when they go to Treasury for the adjustment appropriation, for the mini-budget, as it's popularly called. So what is your role, and if it's not fully implemented yet, how do you see it developing, and by which time can we see you actually, or expect you to play that full role in terms of such budget? The issue that the Honourable Quiller Barnard raised around the cat, for me, it's not about the cat. I can understand Treasury saying to them that, and we've warned them for year after year after year, there's a limit to Treasury. Treasury only has so much income and it's got other responsibilities. And at some point, you're going to be told by Treasury there is no more money. It's about using your money wiser. It's about not wasting money. Also, the fact that Treasury says to them, CJS money is not supposed to be staffed, is justifiable. It's justifiable. The question is, why did SAS then choose to cut that amount? And what would have been your role? That's where I believe the Secretariat should also have played a role and said to them, no, you can't cut this amount, because we're coming with legislation. As you well know, sir, we're coming with legislation. It's going to have an impact on the laboratories. Find another place to cut that money. I don't believe we're in a crisis. I believe they will get the money in the mini budget, they will get their adjustment. I don't believe we're in a crisis, but we're experiencing a setback. So in one way, the fact that we are not dealing with that piece of legislation might be a blessing in disguise. But the fact of the matter is we need to address it, because the legislation is coming. It's going to have bigger impact than only only staff impact. It's going to have financial impact in terms of the capacity within the laboratories. I'm not talking human resource capacity. I'm talking about even equipment, et cetera, et cetera. Training of police officers and so forth. So can you just give us some idea of what you expect in the future in terms of your interaction and your role in terms of search budget?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to the presenters, Secretariat. Chairperson, because I'm speaking last, some of the question maybe will be repeated by mistake. But the last question that was asked by the Ms. Van Zijk is the monitoring of the budget. I just want to understand, are you monitoring the spending pattern, or are you monitoring how they spend their money and so on and so on? Because I don't understand the monitoring of the budget. I just want to understand, are you monitoring the spending patterns accordingly or what? That's the first question which Ms. Van Regel asked. I'll just add on that one. The second one, I don't see any police on reservists. Do you have it or not, and so on? I just want to know if there is any, and so forth. The next question, Chairperson, are there any challenges on CPF's relevant details? If there are relevant details, challenges on this, and CFF, Community Police Forum and Community Safety Forum, are there any challenges? Because we have heard what the police have said, and we just want to know from your side, are there any challenges on this matter? If there are challenges, what is going on? The other question, Chairperson, which I want to raise, what is contained in the Amendment Act? What does it have? Or what does it contain in the Amendment Bill? I mean, not that bill that is coming through. Jefferson, I want you to be educated to this last point that I want to talk about. I heard clearly the head of the Secretariat when he says that the white paper will be finalized, will go to the cabinet, and then to the minister, and then thereafter it will come to us, and so on and so forth. My question, therefore, if the high paper has been finalized and everything, with then the inputs from other stakeholders will come after the finalization or before the finalization? Why I'm asking this question is that I know that you start from the green paper to whatever paper and then you come to the white paper. Now, if the white paper will be finalized and be taken to cabinet and then cabinet minister to the cabinet and so on, and then thereafter, what will happen thereafter? Why I'm asking this question, Chairperson, I want to elaborate a little bit. You have run about, or you are proposing to have run about 6 bills that will be coming through in the financial year. They say the white paper comes with another position on those bills that you are coming with. How are you going to do it? How are you going to deal with it? Are you going to go back and amend those bills, which system is following which one on this one? Is it an egg or a chicken or an egg? I'm asking this question because you have the bills that they are supposed to come to the to you to us and so on to Parliament. But in the meantime, there is this white paper which is before the line. Let's say the white paper says that, and I'm just using an example here. I'm not saying it will say that. Let's say the white paper says that, okay, what we want from SAPS is this 1, 2, 3. The white paper has already said that. But the bill has already been in Parliament, and the bill is already in process, and needs to be finished by the chairperson. And at the end, the white paper comes back and says, no, you were wrong by saying this. You should have changed it like this and this and this and that. What will happen then? Then you go back and amend the amendment or amend the amendment and so on and so forth. It should be a cycle of some sort. That's the question that I'm trying to ask about the white paper and the bills that will be introduced by yourself. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question was covered by Dr. Ngubu about the police, the service police. My second question goes to Mr. Zemo about in his anti-crime initiative, he made mention the fact that they were not organized. Can you tell us how do you expect to remedy the situation? My next question is regarding the implementation and the takeover of KVH. When will you provide us with all the details that will include the transfer of skills and the finalization of everything? My other question is, can we get an assurance that we will get
the
domestic violence that is taking place and affecting women and other vulnerable groups. Another one is this one, which is related to the evaluation of the National Inspectorate. I really am interested to know to what exactly will you be doing here. You have National Inspectorate, sometimes I don't know what it is doing, but we also have provincial inspectorates that I think report to the National Inspectorate. They conduct inspections, they write or prepare detailed reports. The Popo province is one example, but nobody can. So there are reports that they compiled, not implemented. So what I'm interested to know is what exactly will you be evaluating here? What is this? Secretary, you referred to IT, CETA, and all not being able, and therefore yourself going out on tender, but you said this last day. And you seem to be saying one of the same thing. During the annual report, it was exactly what you said here today. What has since happened since then? And why must we be talking about going out on tender again here when this was said last year? Probably on the issues related to CPF, can I be clearly informed as to whether you did the way CPF policy guidelines in the past, because now it's like you're talking about something different, talking about new policy guidelines for CPF. Is this what you are actually saying? And if you are, what is different this time around? There's so many things that are coming up on the ground with regards to CPF, and we're not sure as to what exactly is the policy with regards to that. But also, I hear you now referring to, if I'm not mistaken, referring to CSS and like policies and that level. Is there policy on CSS? Can we be clarified? Because I think at some stage we were waiting for the policy to be finalized. Now I'm putting it like it is already there. What will come first? A SAP bill or the white paper? Because I think probably that might be related to what the Honorable Sophie is saying, or the question that he's asking, what will come first? Because I would have also believed that it definitely must be the white paper and then the aid, because the aid cannot talk to the white paper. These are the questions that I have. These are the questions that I have. Okay. We will then allow the secretary, and also I want to express the views raised by Honorable Kola Panat with regards to the late submission of the PCI Amendment Act, because indeed we are working ourselves out now without any space to breathe. And indeed, it has taken very long for that bill to come before the portfolio committee. And surely I align myself with his sentiments in that regard.
Thanks, Jay.
Secretary, I understand that there's tea outside, and maybe it's better that we break for tea now and come back here at 11.
With regard to the white paper process and the input, we have done a consultation process in the drafting of the white paper.
which has more been with stakeholders, NGOs, research institutions, provinces, SAS, other government departments, etc. But when it gets tabled with the portfolio committee, the portfolio committee normally does their own public consultation processes around it. So there has been a consultation process, but it has been targeted at specific groupings. So, for example, people who've done work on policing, NGOs in different areas, etc., intergovernmental departments, the provincial structures through the MECs, offices, etc. But broad public consultation around it takes place after it's gone to cabinet and it's been tabled. I also want to point out that this is not a new white paper. It's a review of the existing white paper. So we're not going the green paper, etc. processes, because what we are doing is we are reviewing the white paper itself, and we're not turning the white paper on its head. And in fact, one of the big issues for us is that the white paper is your vision document of where you want to go. And one of the things that we found with the white paper when we were reviewing it is that certain developments have happened post 1996-7 when it was drafted, but also that with that, you need to be a bit more detailed about your vision, because otherwise they will interpret it one way. And so the document is not a new white paper, it's a review of the existing white paper. So we've used the existing white paper as the basis for that review, which is why we haven't gone the green paper, then white paper route, because it's just a review of the existing white paper. In terms of the issue of legislation and which comes first, the chicken or the egg, the firearms policy, which is the legislation that's coming on the firearms amendment, is not being changed in the white paper as it stands as a draft at the moment, because that policy is internationally comparable to international best practices and policy around firearms. I mean, we have some of the best policy and legislation around firearms, so it's not going to be changed to affect the amendment of the Firearms Control Act. Those amendments are more to speak to some of the issues that have been picked up in the implementation of the Act, and to make the obligations on SAS a lot clearer. For just to give you an example, for example, on that amendment, we have required that SAS pass and table regulations on what the requirements are for submitting an application for self-defense and what your self-defense application will be judged on. Because at the moment, we need to try and remove some of the discretionary issues that SAS is using in the Firearms Control Act, which is creating problems for us. So a lot of the amendments we are making to the Firearms Control Act are not changes in our policy approach to the firearms. They are technical amendments which basically either spell out the SAS more clearly what their obligations are, or they are technical amendments that just make certain processes easier to manage in terms of it. So we don't believe that the Firearms Control Amendment Act that we tabled before you will be affected by the white paper. The dangerous weapons is not an issue that is raised in the white paper per se. It is a constitutional issue where you have different legislation in different provinces regarding the carrying of dangerous weapons. And the Constitutional Court found that you couldn't have different legislation in different provinces around the dangerous weapons. And that is what we are trying to align. But it's not an issue that comes up in the white paper. However, the South African Police Service Amendment Act, we have requested to the Leader of Government Business that only be tabled in the last quarter of this financial year, which would be January, February, because we believe that is the act that white paper will impact on. And whatever comes out of the white paper will have a serious impact on any amendments that we are making to, because the South African Police Service Act that we will be bringing to you is a complete overhaul of the South African Police Service Act. And therefore, what comes out of the discussions on the white paper will affect that amendment. We obviously, once we have finalized the process of the white paper and tabled it, we're going to start working on the amendments to the SASA Act, but those amendments can only be finalized once Parliament has finished its white paper process. So Parliament will have 6 months to deal with that process, possibly even longer if necessary, before the Amendment Act is tabled, because we would have to be guided by what the white paper says. Our amendments to the South African Police Service Act speak to aligning that the South African Police Service Act to the current constitution. The South African Police Service Act was written under the interim constitution, and it still refers to issues under the interim constitution. So our intention, and it was in fact drafted before the existing white paper was even put into operation. So our intention in bringing the amendment on the South African Police Service Act is to align it with the constitution, but also to align it with what comes out of the white paper discussion. So the South African Police Service Act will only be tabled once the white paper process has been finalised. So from that point of view, we think that that is the major act that is going to be affected by the white paper. Obviously, the DPCI Act is we have a constitutional deadline. But if there are subsequent amendments that come out of the white paper, they can be made through the SASA Amendment Act that will be coming after the white paper. So I don't know if that clarifies that. Can I just also, while I'm on the DPCI, then just on the Amendment Act, because it's a bit confusing. We're talking about two SASA Amendment Acts here. We're talking about the Amendment Act that has been tabled before Parliament that speaks to the DPCI and relates to the Constitutional Court judgment. The other SASA Amendment Act that we're talking about is the entire South African Police Service Act, which we're only going to be tabling in February next year. So there are two acts that we're talking about. While I'm on the SASA Amendment Act that's before you now, that speaks to the DPCI, I think that we have to acknowledge that we have had capacity issues around legislation. I think we've acknowledged that. However, the late tabling of that DPCI Act was not only related to our legislative capacity. We actually did quite an extensive international review of what exists internationally. We also went through a series number of drafts in terms of what is workable. I mean, at some point we even had to engage Treasury and the DPSA with regard to whether what we were coming up with would actually be workable. I mean, we've seen problems, for example, in defence, where things are not 100% clear. We drafted, and then we had to go back to the drafting table with Treasury and DPSA to say, would this actually work or wouldn't it? And we had to make changes based on that. So I think that it was a twofold process. One was our capacity, because in the end it landed up being drafted directly from my office. And two was the fact that we actually had to have quite extensive engagement with Treasury and the DPSA about what would work in this process. So we take on board the criticism that has been raised by the Portfolio Committee. I think it was raised when we tabled the Act, and we accept that criticism. But this was the reality of the situation that we were faced with. The Act had to be drafted out of my office because we don't have the legislative support, and secondly, that we had to go through this intensive engagement process with Treasury and DPSA based on the first draft that we drafted to them, and that we tabled in Cabinet. We had to then go back to the drawing board around whether it was actually going to work in terms of what we had tabled. So I don't know if you want to comment on that before we answer other questions, Chair. Mm-hmm.
So we take that explanation and it makes us to work. However, we are ensuring that we are in line
we're not compromising any process, and we've gone ahead to advertise that and gone to extend the due date for submission of meeting of submission, and then we're starting with the hearing next week. So we've tried to be within the stated regulations for processing all bills. The only thing is that we will work hard, and that working hard without having time to breathe has nothing to do with the processes being legitimate. I just wanted to say that.
Chair, but before we move on, if I may just make one question about the white paper. I just wanted to ensure there's something in there. We've come across frequency, because you spoke of uniformity in applications. We look at the bail given by SAS members, and I'm hoping there's a whole section on that, because we will see in one station five rates. This one's given R100 bail, this one's given R1,000 bail, this one's just let out because they can be, and so it goes on. There seems to be no uniformity, and I understand all the complexities of legal processes, and this one might have been, you know, but it's actually a judgment call being made by SAS members, not by courts. So that's my difficulty, and I think there may be a major problem there.
The question is very correct. However, the police, in the main, are granting bail for cases such as assault GBH. This is what we saw. It was one rape case where also that granted bail. Because one rape case, which we saw, there was a deal with that. And then it's assault GBH, serious stuff. But really, it's that thing, you know. And the guideline for this one is R500, the other one. It's done by detectives. They said to us, by right, they're supposed to interact with the prosecutor. And the prosecutor must then say, you can grant this amount of bail under these conditions. You know, they're not doing it. They just come and they just grant bail. So it's like it's within their scope of practice to do it for serious crimes, unlike it is covered in the Criminal Procedure Act. I think it's Section 15. So it's not like that now. But that's not correct. It was defense for rape. If we saw one case of rape, and then the rest are still to be
Jefferson, after this discussion between you and Ms. Kalabana, the Jennifer Justice, the Secretary of Justice, I would really, really advise, you know, to amend the amendment. To me, it makes the thing to go back and backwards. I would really advise that we wait for the white paper to be finalized. Because really, to me, it seems as if, you see, these things are coming bit in pieces every now and then. When the white paper, let's say if the white paper has been finalized yesterday, and then these thoughts, these inputs come after the white paper, then to go back to amend the act or the bill or whatever, that is why I'm trying to say what comes first. I would really, really advise that we look at the white paper properly before we introduce any bill. Because if the bill, it doesn't matter what the people are saying today. They may change their mind tomorrow. The cabinet may change their mind tomorrow and do something else on any other bill that is affecting the white paper. Therefore, I would really advise that we go through the white paper process before you come to the amendment of the, because it will impact directly with the white paper. You can't have a white paper which is different from the act or the bill that we are coming with, because it will be two things separately, and the person will know which one to take. That's my advice, Jefferson, that I would put it on board. Thank you.
Yeah. Dr. Gover, I think we're talking about two things. One is the amendment of the South African Police Service Act. that will give right to the amendment of the Hawks. We're talking about the Hawks. The drama. No, let me continue, sir. That, and that one cannot wait for the white paper process, because that one, it talks to the Constitutional Court judgment. So that one, we have no option but to process now. Then second, it's the white paper. And the white paper will come first, then the bill, the act later. That's what is going to happen. So it's two amendments of the South African Police Service Act. But the first one cannot wait for the white paper processes because there is a court judgment. That one, therefore, we've got to do that. Following that, we're expecting that they're going then to table to us the white paper. We're going to process that, done with it. And then the act, the whole South African Police Service Act. And what the secretary is saying is that if the white paper might have impact in the amended Hawks section of the South African Police Service Act, during the process where we will be amending the whole act, will effect that amendment. I think that's what she's saying. So I think what you are actually saying is exactly what she has said. Just that you said it's an advice, and she said it's like that from an administrative point of view, from a political point of view.
Yeah, just and to add to that, Rob Chairperson, and I think the other amendments like the dangerous weapons and the Firearms Act, which I think also worries the Honourable Lawyer, speaks to different acts, completely different acts, not going to be impacted by the SAP Act. So I think we covered in terms of that. There was something else that I wanted to raise now.
Can I just respond quickly to the bail issue?
I'm being intimidated today by Honourable Mordabati. No proof to this. Yes, I just wanted to say to Dale on that issue. If you look at the Criminal Procedure Act, they are only allowed to give bail for two issues. Take up to the value of 2,400 rand and small amounts of stuff off. The rest they're not supposed to be giving. So they're actually contravening that. And I believe we're going to pretty soon come into serious trouble when one of these people who are released on bail go back and commit a further crime or go back to the witnesses or something like that.
It actually opens them to corruption. That's what it is.
I think with the bail issue, let me just deal with it in the context of the white paper. I think already our white paper is longer than most white papers. It's 75. You'll see from our APPs, we talk about policy arising out of the white paper that still needs to be further developed. Because the white paper will, I think if one looks at one of the weaknesses possibly of what happened with the first white paper, is the white paper presented the vision, but because the secretary's role changed and it got downgraded, etc., there was no policy, there was no process to basically support the white paper process with additional policy documents which speak to the white paper. And I think that's why we've identified that there would be, every year there would be at least one or two issues for the next 3 years. There would be at least one or two issues that we basically are going to be picking up that have come up in the white paper but need further expansion in terms of policy documents. I think one of the issues we have been grappling with in the white paper is, as I say, it's already 75 pages, which is longer than most people's white papers. The previous white paper, I think, was about 30 pages. And I said at the beginning, our reason for that was because we think that if you just give them a broad vision, they tend to interpret it themselves as what that vision means. So we've tried to be a bit more explicit. So while we recognize that, and we've taken note of the fact that bail is an issue that we need to develop, the white paper may not be
necessarily the mechanism. It may be that we need to develop directives and policy based on what already exists in the Criminal Procedures Act, and that is something that we will look at definitely as a matter of urgency based on what the experiences of the Portfolio Committee are. So either it would be done as through the white paper and then subsequent development done, or would be done through looking at what the Criminal Procedure actually says and looking at policy directives on that issue that SAPS need to implement. Because I think what we would also need to do is to look through SAPS standing orders, because one of the things we found, for example, around the SAPS 13 stores, we don't need to come up with new policies around it. They're there. It's about implementation, and it's about how they're being implemented. When the ME unit looked at the SAPS 13 stores, and they wanted to come with a whole lot of recommendations. I said, but what do the standing orders say? They said, no, it's there. Then it's an issue of how do we implement what should be being implemented, as opposed to trying to come up with new policy when it already exists. So I think that's the issue that we need to look at, even around the bail issues. With, I think we dealt with Honourable Member Colonel Barnard's issue with regard to the our explanation around the DPCI. The litigation process is, look, for us it's not just...
I'm not sure whether it's done with Mr. Kilburn's question.
Oh.
Because he requested to leave it. Okay, one would be your role in the monitoring of budget. The other one would be on the reservist policy. If you have any challenges with regards to CPF and FSC, and then CSF, yes. Yeah, I think those are the questions, if I've covered them the other way.
Sorry, Honourable Member, I didn't put the names, I just wrote the questions. So I didn't put the names for you to ask the questions. So I apologise about that. With regard to the budget, we're looking at both the spending trends and the actual spending. By the actual spending, I don't mean that we go through the details of each invoice, etc. We don't have the capacity to do that. However, under each programme, there would be different items. For example, litigation is one item, and that we're looking at that spending. So we would be looking at both spending patterns and problem areas in the spending. We work very closely with National Treasury on that. I mean, National Treasury have a wealth of information on this area because they do it anyway. So we work very closely with them on that process, and they have been really, really helpful to us in that process. Basically, we would be looking at both. At the moment, what our monitoring of the budget has been quite reactive, in the sense that we've been looking at the budget after the money's been spent and looking at how that spending patterns are. But I think what we would like to be doing going forward, and it's something which I personally have discussed with the acting NASCOM, is that, yes, we were consulted in the ATPs and the stat panel at the last minute. Now, what we have agreed we're going to be doing going forward is that we're going to be involved during the strat plan and APP process. And that process must include the budget and providing recommendations. What we're also going to be doing is, before that budget is taken to MinCombat, which is the executive body where the budget is discussed, we want to make input on that budget. Because I don't know if you want me to clarify it now, because I know that the Honourable Member has to leave, but that issue of Treasury and the personnel thing is not 100% accurate. It's not 100% accurate what's being said around that. So we would want to be able to put into MinCombat, where the decision is made around the budget, but also to on a quarterly basis, look at tax spending patterns. I think the unfortunate thing for us was that we landed up speaking to SAC towards the end of the financial year about how they're spending their budget, whereas we should have been speaking to them after the first quarter as to how they're spending their budget. And that's what we intend to do going forward, is quarterly to be meeting with SAPS and the Minister regarding the spending patterns. because once you pick up problems, and you pick them up in February, because you've done your report in January or February, it's a bit late to try and rectify those spending patterns, because you've got 2 months left of the financial year. So for us, it's both being able to input into the budget, but that is something which we intend to do going forward. But at the moment, we have been able to, through our relationship with National Treasury, start at least impacting on the way in which SAFSA is spending. The reservist policy. The reservist policy has been finalised. I think we were due to.
I know for a fact that maybe the question comes from the manner in which we have been concerned about the budget, the sub-budget. You know, last year, for instance, the financial year, the budget of 3.5 billion rand for TNS, technology management, they should have known that they will not be able to spend that budget. During the course of the financial year, they tell us they don't have infrastructure, and therefore they're not spending that budget. Huge amount of money we should have been spent elsewhere. Same thing with their building budget, 1.2 billion rand, 28% spending. I mean, this is our worry, to say we think some way, somehow, they do not apportion the budget properly, and it is giving us a problem. We worried even this year. The presentation that was put before the portfolio committee was not convincing, particularly on the building. They suddenly are now saying the list of police stations that are on their grant plan does not mean that if it is under 2012-13, the police station will be built in 2013-12-13 or 13-14 or 14-15. It actually might mean that already there is something happening about that police station. It will be completed by that. When you want to take that as the D answer, you then say, okay, fine, are you saying these that appeared during the previous financial year have been finished? No, I mean completed, they've not been completed. So it's something that we're not sure as to what exactly does this thing do these things mean to the portfolio committee. And that is why probably the members are asking these questions as to what your role is in the whole process of budgeting, to say you're not going to spend this money, so you can't budget this amount of money. The question which Honorable Kola Barnett is asking, you told last year that you're going to hire 800 so many for forensic service management, I mean forensic service laboratories or services. Just at a wink of whatever time, whatever, we've changed. We've transferred that money to detective services. But we have an act that we must implement. And these numbers were based on the implementation of that act that was passed. They've decided to do that. So this is the frustration of the portfolio committee with regards to sub-budget. And that is why I think members are asking this question, because they just decide anything, anytime given. The issue regarding the 300 million, we're not surprised, because when we said, when Honorable Kola Barnett was actually saying in the meeting, let's call the treasurer as the portfolio committee and intervene, because we can't allow this. We will not allow it. Then the department said, no, don't worry, we're going to do it. We're going to speak to the head of Department of Treasury. And said, fine, but we're giving you time. So this is the frustration of the portfolio committee, and probably that is why you're asking this role. Is it the role that you'll play in monitoring the spending of the budget? Because probably we also think this time around we've got to do closer monitoring of how they're spending, how they're implementing these commitments they put before us. Whether we call them to appear before the portfolio committee, or we say you're going to be writing to the portfolio committee on what is happening, how much have you spent, what is happening now, what are you doing. It's something we don't want to do, but I think probably it's reaching that stage.
Chair, I think we would be happy to attend those meetings where the budget is discussed from our side, and I think last year we wouldn't have been ready to do that. I think this year we're ready to be able to, if we are invited by the portfolio committee when you're having your budget thing, we would definitely be able to present information to the portfolio committee. I think we would also be ready to to present quarterly on what our issues are around the budget to you. But I think the big issue is planning and budgeting in SAP. Is that what one of our concerns at the moment is that what happens is SAPs get allocated a budget and then they plan outside of the budget. I mean, when we've asked SAPs that this is the budget we require for this year, we've actually costed our APPs and saying this is what we think we need. We've gone down to the fact of even costing, okay, how many flights? We can do that because we're a small organization. How many flights will it take to do this? How many, if we're having HODs meetings, what are the costs involved, et cetera? Now, I'm not saying that SAPs necessarily have to do that detail of planning, but one of the things that needs to happen is SAPs planning must be linked to their budgeting process. You can't plan and then get a budget and then decide how you're going to allocate that budget. And I think that's one of the fundamental problems, is that the planning is not... The finance section of SAP deal with the financial side of things, and the planning section don't. So then often your budget will not necessarily suit your ability to implement a particular issue. And I think that's something that through the process, because if one looks, I mean, I spoke about that this process starts in June. When you become a designated department, your planning process starts in June. And we need to be impacting from that June process in how SAP budgeting is, because the final budget is approved before yourselves even see the ATPs and strat plan. And I think that earlier intervention into how SAP is budgeting related to their plans is required from our side, and it may possibly be something that the portfolio committee wants to look into. But then what we've picked up, when we did the report on SAP's budget in January and how their budget spending was happening, we found that some of the priority areas that we picked up in SAP are exactly the areas where SAP is either over or underspending. So the spending of the budget and the transferring of money from one project to another actually links directly to performance issues, which is why we can't afford to just be presenting a report in January to SAP on it. Why, on a quarterly basis, we need to be monitoring these things and seeing where money is and how money is being spent, and whether it speaks to the priorities of the strat plan of the APP and the priorities of SAP at that moment in time. I'm not sure if that answers the question, but for us, planning and budgeting cannot be separated, and at the moment they're being separated in SAP. And spending patterns and performance management can also not be separated, and at the moment they're two separate processes. And that's what we want to see going forward, is that those processes are linked.
I hear what the Secretary is saying, and I agree with that, but I also believe that the interaction should come at the first point of plan, and not only in the monitoring quarterly. It must come in the first order of plan, because budget follows policy, not the other way around. And we already had the situation this week. Budget follows policy, and then your APP is drafted as a result of that. Already this week we had an hour-long discussion, because they said, and then they turned around on it at the end of the hour, we're no longer going to have victim support centres. Now, the policy, as far as we know from the government, in terms of that, have not changed. It remains a policy of government. It remains a priority of government. It remains a priority of the minister as well, in terms of violence against women and children. So that is, for me, is the concern. So the sooner we get into the process, we don't want to, not our duty at that point, but the sooner the Secretariat gets into the process, I think the better.
I think that's why I mentioned the period of June, that the budgeting process starts in June. This year we got the APPs in February, SAPS's APPs, and it's difficult to consult with the document that's already on the table. So when I mentioned the period of June, it wasn't only for ourselves, but it was for ourselves to engage that. Just on the victim empowerment issue, I think that is something which we want to take up, because it's not only that the policy hasn't changed, it's a cluster priority. It's one of the JCPS priority areas. So I'm not sure where SAP took that decision, but it's something we would definitely want to follow up. On the reservist policy, as I said, has been finalized. What we have asked now, and I think we were supposed to present to the portfolio committee, but we're ready to present any time the portfolio committee requests us to do that. What we have requested is that SAPSA line, and I think this is where SAPSA maybe got the wrong end of the stick. The policy does not have to be aligned with their national standing orders. Their national standing orders have to be aligned with the policy. And that is the process that we are engaging with SAPS around at the moment, is that it's their national standing orders that must align with the policy, not the other way around. So we have got a joint forum with SAPS dealing with the alignment of their policy, but I did hear that they said we were aligning our policy with their national standing orders. That's not correct, it's the other way around. And we made that very clear to them in that meeting, so I don't know if that was just a word slip. On the CPF, I mean, I think there's been a lot of questions asked about the CPF. Look, there's no doubt that CPFs are an international challenge. It's not just a South African phenomenon. They are an international challenge. That when we did our international research around CPFs, we found that a huge number of countries were grappling with the issue of CPFs. They were seriously grappling with that CPFs was in the 80s and early 90s, this kind of thing that all police agencies wanted to embark on, but they grappled with some of the logistics of how that plays itself. Issues of representativity, whether CPS can represent a community, issues of the role of CPS. And that's not to say that we are talking about doing away with CPS. That's not the route that we're talking about going. However, we need to take into account that it's not that CPS are not, it's not just a simple process to rectify the CPS issue. The CSS policy basically has been done, and it's been approved by the cluster, by JCPS cluster. We could forward a copy of that to yourselves. What we have done is we've done it on the basis that in 18 months' time, if there are changes to that policy during the implementation, we can input on those. And the implementation plan, we can forward both of those to the portfolio committee. There is a difference between the CSS and the CPS, and that is spelled out very clearly in the CSS document, that the CSS is a broader safety forum, and our focus on the CPS is to say that their focus must be on policing and their function with regard to policing. I think that I could ask Mr. Zemo to highlight some of the issues that are coming out in the policy, but SACs are not withdrawing from CPS per se. They can't, because the CPS is attached to that police station. But issues of funding of CPS, and we've gone through what should be funded and what shouldn't be funded, because we're not talking about just general funding of CPS. We've clearly looked at what is the role of CPS, what funds do they need to perform that role. That cannot come from that. That is going to come from the provinces. And we have gone through to look at what are the areas of funding that CPS. You cannot have a structure which is supposed to relate to SAT and have some degree of community oversight of SAT, but is also funded by SAT. So the funding of CPS will not happen through SAP. That does not mean that SAP withdraws from CPS completely, because they still need to have a relationship and to be able to engage with CPS. Otherwise, what's the point if CPS operates in complete isolation? So the issue where SAP is withdrawing on is really related to who funds them and what gets funded of CPS. It's not that SAP withdraws from the CPS process at all. And I think Mr. Zemo can go into a bit more detail about what some of the key areas that it focuses on, but it looks at representativity of CPS and what are the processes around ensuring that CPS are represented, what is the actual role of CPS, exactly what is it. And one of the things that we need to understand is that this policy document or guidelines that we've developed, actually some of them already exist. Some of them we've changed slightly, like the funding issues, etc. But some of them already exist in either the Police Act or the regulations, but they're not properly understood and they're not properly implemented. And so, for example, how you go about setting up CPS is very clear. It's there. in the regulations and in the Act, but it's not being adhered to. So it's again an issue of changing those things that need to be changed, but not recreating the wheel on issues that don't, but putting it together in one concrete document that everybody understands and everybody can work from. Mr. Zemo,
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, the broad issues that we are focused on and that has arrived. One is the issue of concern by CPF around the issue of the success of the CPF. There's been a feeling that they think that it was done and so on. And on many different occasions, we've assured them that they are in the Act. In the regulations, we just don't have the power ourselves to scrap CPF. So they'll always be there, but at such time that the Act is changed if government feels differently. The second issue is the issue of their mandate. We have felt that on that issue, Chairperson, that maybe ourselves as the ministries in the past have not looked carefully at that. At some point, they've acted as MPPs, sometimes acted as reservists, and so on and so on. But there we think the blame should lie with us, maybe broader society, that we created a structure, but we did not capacitate community to be able to interpret that type of mandate. We wanted ordinary people to participate. But in the framework, in the Act itself and the regulations, there is no institution that's supposed to capacitate these structures. So in a sense, when we talk about this new approach that we're following, it's not necessarily the new approach, but it's an elaboration of what already exists in the regulations and the Act to say there is something that's missing, that's strengthening. And the point that the Secretary mentioned, it relates to the third broad area, the issue of the establishment. There we think it's an anomaly that SAPS is so much involved in establishing a structure that should oversee SAPS. So we've been speaking with provinces to say, actually, this is an oversight function. And provinces, by and large, have agreed that they should look into the issues of capacitating, training, and so on and so on, because it's an anomaly. Also, the same thing that the Secretary has mentioned about financing. That maybe if there are resource issues, we need an oversight structure to look at that, but not that. However, that issue is very closely related with the issue of the mandate of CPF. We feel that part of the things that need to be cleared is that CPF are at the center on the one hand between communities and themselves, and on the other, and the police, and the interaction should be regular with both constituencies to ensure effective functioning. So it's just an elaboration of what is there in the Act. And there might be, of course, need to be some slight amendments because the Act says they are established subject to the directive of the MEC. Now, it appears for some reason provinces themselves have not been exercising that directive authority. So there is a feeling that maybe it needs to be articulated differently so that they understand the directive authority. The last issue, Chairperson, is that we've already touched on the issue of capacity. We feel very strongly that together with provinces and the other oversight structures, we need to come up with means to capacitate CPF. Thank you, Chairperson.
Move on to the other question. Okay. The question of litigation. In fact, was one of the issues we raised in the budget, something worth looking at in terms of spending on litigation. For us, it's a crucial area, and it doesn't only relate to what the Honourable Member is saying about whether we're fighting cases, whether we're not fighting cases, etc. How are we managing those cases? But it also relates to the extent to which litigation can point to problems in your organization, and you can take corrective measures to rectify those problems. So, for example, if you are picking up, if you're managing litigation properly, and you pick up that in the housing area or in a particular area, in Tembisa and housing, you've actually been sued for false arrest on a number of occasions, then you've got a problem with staff members in that area understanding arrest procedures, and you need to be proactive in addressing that. So for us, management of litigation speaks to a number of issues. It speaks to how, what we decide to fight, what also, what action is taken against somebody who is sued and the state lose the case because there's been brutality. Then what action does that take against the person who is unlawfully shot somebody, etc., etc.? So it's about managing how we manage the actual legal processes, but it's also managing the information that comes out of litigation and how that is actioned by that. And that's what we want the review to look at. And it's something which is was discussed, in fact, before I even joined the Secretariat. There were proposals made to SAT, which I received when I joined, that addressed a lot of these issues. For us, they've never been implemented, and what we want to find out is why, how, what is the problems with implementing them, because we don't have to recreate the wheel on this issue. There's been a number of inputs made from the Portfolio Committee, from reports that the Honourable Member spoke about, from a workshop that took place 2 years ago, but nothing has happened with that. So for us, we're not going to be doing new research necessarily on the area, but putting together what already exists and looking at why it's not being implemented on the litigation area. And then obviously our MNE unit is going to have to monitor how that then gets implemented. I think the HR capacity, as I mentioned, we basically, our human resource capacity to do what we need to be doing. I think that we are very clear that by June we must have, and I mean, literally within a week of the minister signing it off, we'd advertise the first 21 positions. So we're very clear that in order for us to succeed, we have to develop that capacity, particularly the legislation capacity. In terms of the complaints, I think that we would agree with what both the Honourable Member Kola Barnard and the Honourable Member Van Dijk said, that we cannot not take on these complaints. We know we shouldn't be doing it, but we can't not do it until we have a proper system in place. And I hear what the Honourable Member is saying about the stations, etc., but that's not working. And until we get that working and some sort of monitoring systems in place, because very often the complaint may be about the station commissioner or the head of a branch command in that area, and then it needs to be dealt with at a provincial level, not necessarily at the station level. So those, I think for us, I think what we haven't maybe put enough energy on is how should SAS be dealing with the complaints, rather than indeed trying to deal with the complaints ourselves. And that's something which I think our MNE unit is now going to be focusing on. The DNA legislation will be, we have basically been instructed by I think your parliamentary program, that it would need to be on the parliamentary agenda by September, the DNA legislation. So basically we are targeting September to have tabled the DNA legislation with the Portfolio Committee, but we would like, we're working on the policy and the legislation alongside each other, but we would like the Portfolio Committee, given their interest and their international visit on this, to approve the policy, and then we can tinker with the legislation based on what the portfolio says around the policy. But our deadline for tabling that legislation is September. The Treasury's, the cutting down of that members and Treasury's instructions is something that we are unpacking at the moment with Treasury. We've been asked by the Minister of Police to look at what is the international best practices, to look at international, and if we are going to be cutting, if we do have to cut down, where are we cutting down and how should we cut them down, rather than to just have this approach that when somebody retires, we're not replacing them, or in this area we had a lot of new posts, we're going to just do away with them. That is if we actually require to cut down. But we still need to unpack with Treasury, because we think, from my understanding and my engagements with Treasury, one of the problems with SAPS's budget is the way which they structured their budget, which means that their administrative program is too big. Okay. All government departments, and that's why you'll see in the report that we've submitted to you, and it's one of the reasons why that has been a bit late, is that we are busy discussing with Treasury that next year when we become a designated department, certain things that fall under administration, IT, purchase of IT, certain supply chain issues, need to be allocated to the different operational units. Otherwise, your administration budget is bloated, and your other operational functions budget is very small. And that is a problem that Treasury has been having with SAPS for some time, is the way in which SAPS structure their budget. And the fact that their administration budget is every... I think we've raised it even ourselves with the Portfolio Committee, that this issue of not having your own technology budget as a secretariat, everything is handled by TSM and it's handled as part of the administration budget, means that we can't account for what technology we've been given or not given. And it's those sorts of things that have concerned Treasury about how SAPS's budget is spent. I also do know, and as I say, we've been asked to unpack this whole cutting down of staff with Treasury, but I also do know that there has been a problem between Treasury's full and letter system, which all government departments are using, and SAPS's personnel system, where Treasury needs to be able to verify that those personnel that are on your system are also reflected on the Vulindlela system to show that the personnel are actually there. And there has been an incompatibility between SAPS's system and Treasury's system. And that has also could also have led to this issue of personnel, because if you ask Treasury how many vacancies and whatever else there are on SAPS, it's a much higher level of vacancies than what SAPS has. So what I'm saying is that I think that this whole issue of Treasury saying you have to cut down by 9,000 people is something which we are unpacking with Treasury at the moment, and exactly what it means. And if it is a personnel cut, exactly how will that happen? And benchmarking, because we do know that the South African Police Service is at the moment above the percentage comparable rate internationally in terms of population to police officers. So I think that it's important that the Portfolio Committee that understand that we're still unpacking that issue with Treasury. We've been asked to unpack it, and we will be happy to come back to the Portfolio Committee with what the final what finally comes out of that discussion, because we also heard about it for the first time at the National Management Forum last week, and we've been asked to unpack it on that basis.
Chair,
if
I may. What we're hearing from you is actually quite different to what we heard yesterday. I mean, they literally held up a piece of paper and say, we have received this instruction from Treasury that we must do this. We are not given any other option. And now you're saying, actually, it's all still under negotiation and you're dealing with it. So we're hearing there's this draconian decision that we have to now implement on the one side. It may only be staff cuts. It must be, we must cut staff by 9,000 members. Boom. That's what we're told. There are the pieces of paper held up. That's the proof. No discussion. Now you're telling us a totally different story. So I'm quite confused.
What I'm saying is that we're still unpacking whether that was what the instruction was, because there have been issues that Treasury have raised around SAPS's budget, which, as I said, that the administration portion is too high, etc., which obviously had preempted this decision. And we are busy with Treasury in unpacking it. We also heard for the first time last week that SAPS had to cut down. And I think what I'm trying to explain is that we need to understand Treasury's reasoning. And the reasoning may not be just that Treasury has taken this draconian decision. There could be other factors that have impacted on the decision by Treasury, which means that if we get those factors right, that situation we could relook at that situation. And that's what I'm trying to say, is that this issue needs to be unpacked, because I don't think it's as simple as Treasury just taking a decision saying, we're going to cut it, and you must have followed suit. I think there are
issues around the way in which that budget is structured, the way in which systems speak to each other, which has had an influence on some of the decisions made by Treasury, and that is what we're trying to unpack at the moment. And then if the and what I said is, if the final decision is that it has to be a 9,000 cut, then we need to look at how that happens. You can't just say somebody who retires is not going to be replaced, because they could be in a critical area. They could be performing a critical function. You can't just say we're going to then what the minister instructed SACS was that then SACS must engage with us around how that process is going to happen. So the first process is to unpack why and how Treasury did that. And then the second process is it is a non-negotiable with Treasury, because all government departments have been asked to have serious haircuts. And if it is a non-negotiable process with Treasury, how that happens and what we cut and what we don't cut. Because already there are issues around certain support services and stats being quite bloated. So if you are going to haircut, we need to make sure we're haircutting in the right place. So I think that's the answer. We're unpacking it with Treasury. We're not saying it is or isn't the case. We're saying we're unpacking it with Treasury. Once we've unpacked it, there must be a process around. If the cut is 9,000, then we must have a process to do that.
I hear what the Secretary is saying, and I also, and I raised it yesterday as well, I also don't believe that Treasury would simply tell any department just to cut this now. That would be the last point of where you look when you want to cut. And therefore it goes about reprioritizing rather than cutting staff. Where are we going to get savings of 300 million? That's what it basically boils down to. We need to have savings of 300 million. Where are we going to get them? And I think there is a problem with their personnel system. And we must acknowledge that. We've hammered them ourselves during this week about promotions and about dead people getting promoted and retired people getting promoted, etc. So clearly there is a problem with their personnel system and their own personnel records. So Treasury is most properly correct in that regard as well. But Treasury negotiates with departments. Treasury doesn't instruct departments. They will negotiate with them, and they will tell them, we need a 300 million rand cut from you. And then the department must go and find that 300 million rand cut. But I think the issue is more complex in this regard, Chairperson, because of the fact that SACS have used ring-fence funds to fund that 300 million. And that makes it a bit more complex as well. So SACS, in fact, didn't cut from their own budget. SACS cut from their allocation coming for the ring-fence fund. And my concern is that we're going to find ourselves in a while in trouble because they've used that funds to cut. You can't, on the one hand, say to us, like they did, that Treasury said that they must cut 300 million. It's ring-fence funds for JTS. The ring-fence funds cannot be used for personnel. But then you take that 300 million and you move it over to the detectives and you use it basically for the same thing. So I'm a bit worried about that situation as well. But it speaks also to you, person, and I would like just the Secretary to respond to the question to also indicate to us what their interaction is with the Planning Commission's recommendations regarding the two streams of appointments of insights. Because it all speaks to this personnel issue. And it speaks to policy in the end. And it speaks to where are we moving, professionalizing, etc. And I don't think we can divorce these issues. That is a reality. As the Secretary has said, every single department has to cut. How are we going to address all of these issues and not piecemeal? Because I think that is what is happening currently within SACS as well. They basically crisis management around these issues. Because come June, they're most probably going to be able to solve this issue. I'm pretty sure June, July, they're going to get the money that they want. But they are going to still going to be an insistence from Treasury side that you need to cut somewhere. And the point is, that basically I've got to go and sit down and reevaluate the 3-year budgeting process. And it's only then that we will get to a point where we say, okay, fine, we're not cutting personnel numbers. We are actually going to cut this wasteful expenditure that we don't see any results on in terms of the IT environment or whatever other building environment or whatever the case may be.
I don't think that will come in because I think we agree with that completely. The Planning Commission, yeah. Look, the Planning Commission and have engaged around this issue. We've agreed to set up a joint working team, but I must be honest with you, that team hasn't met this year. We spoke last year about it. It hasn't met this year because of largely as a result of our side just not having time, but it's something that we will prioritize going forward, that we had discussed even around issues around the white paper and stuff from the Planning Commission being incorporated into the white paper, although we have already had a meeting and tried to align some of the stuff. Obviously, there may be issues where we might debate with them around some of the issues that are in the Planning Committee, but we agreed that we would have a joint working group between ourselves and the Planning Committee, but I think we haven't met, and it's largely been as a result of our capacity to meet during this year, and that's something that we will take up and prioritize. With regard to the plan saying 3 years, I think the plan is still 13-14. So we're already 2 years into the cycle, which is why we've made it a 3-year plan, because it's 2000 and it's this year, it's next year, and then a new plan, and then a new 5-year cycle starts. But maybe Basie could also respond to that. But that, my understanding is that we're already 2 years into the 5-year cycle, which is why we've only put it for 3 years, because each year, next year, it'll be 2 years, because it's a 5-year strat plan, and the 5-year period is determined by Treasury. So that's my understanding of that process, but that when we first presented to you our first attempt at a strat plan, we were at the beginning of the strat plan process, but we're now 2 years into that 5 years. So we've only got 3 years remaining of that 5 years, but Mr. Bazzard can maybe just comment on that issue.
Yeah, thanks, Secretary. Chairperson, I think that it was only since last year that we really started to draw up a proper strat plan and even APP. And within the APP, we have our 3-year term in those columns in terms of our annual, in terms of our non-financial performance information. I think the other issue that was raised by the honourable member is the issue around the in and out years with regard to the budget. And I think that when we draw up now in June, our new APP and strat plan that will be submitted in 2013-14 when we become a designated department in terms of the complete 100% treasury guidelines, then we will have them to comply, because we will also then be moving away from sepsis budget program, and because we are going to appoint our own CMO, and then from then onwards we will have a fully aligned, in terms of trade regulations and framework, a fully aligned APP and strat plan that will include, for instance, also the budget.
My concern is that, I just want to get that document. My concern is, and I think you need to check with Treasury as well around this issue and public service around this issue, because you are supposed to have a 5-year strat plan, because you can't throw away what was, and you can't throw away what's coming. What was influencing what's coming. But the problem is that SAPs have got the inner and the outer year. Currently, your budget is in there. So in a way, you're allowing SAPs to budget for you. That's what it boils down to. And that's why I say it's important, Chairperson, that it be done. But there's also a concern in terms of the fact that the Auditor General previously has criticized SAPs on it because of the lack of the Secretariat's information on this. So that is why I'm raising the issue. Previously, the Auditor General, one of the comments of the Auditor General in the annual report was exactly around these issues of lack of documentation. implementation in terms of the secretariat, that then, because a cost unit at this stage of SAP then influences the report that comes out from the Auditor General for the SAPS.
I think, Chair, we do have an in and out budget, and we can send that to you. I think that we can send that in and out to you. But we do have it because obviously when we were budgeting for this year, we needed to look at last year's. I think that accuracy, we're really talking about last year being the first year where the budget. I think the first year we presented to you, but we can give you the last 2 years. Before that, the budget was a bit of a mess, but we can certainly give you the last 2 years, which is within these 5-year cycles. Well, we could give you before, but it's not going to relate to anything.
Sorry, I'm not asking for the forward one, for the backward one. I'm asking for the forward one. You're supposed to give us the inner and the outer year, because at this stage, as we sit here, we have got no clue whether you're going to have enough money next year to further implement the act. We have no clue whether you've got enough money planned for in terms of the outer year as well, and that is my concern.
Then I think that's something that we will work on and provide to the portfolio committee. I hear what the honourable member is saying, and we will work on that and provide that to the portfolio committee on a day that the chairperson says at the end of the meeting that any outstanding documents have to be in by. With regard to the sanitisation of our database, you'll see on page 19 of our APP that has to be that basically the strategic target is one updated for this year. And on the next page, page 20, you'll see that the target is one updated database and it has to be completed in the first quarter. So you'll see, although we didn't put it in the presentation, the target is in the annual report as having to be completed in the first quarter of this current financial year. So on page 20, 3.3.6, sanitation of database, first quarter of this year. So it has got a target, it's just we didn't need to put that target into the presentation. I think we've dealt with the issue of in and out. In terms of the action, in terms of the target dates with regard to us becoming a designated department and taking over the domestic violence and what the implementation plan is around that. We do have an implementation plan, and we would be happy to forward that to the portfolio committee, which goes into details about those issues. We're not necessarily talking about an MOU with that, but we're talking about a shared service agreement with that. The question of whether we have access to SAP's information, that will be included in the regulation. That will not require an MOU, a memorandum of understanding with SAP. It will be a legislative prescript contained in legislation through the regulations. But we are entering into a shared service agreement with SAP, which we have a team from SAP's side and our side working on. Our anticipation is that shared service agreement should be in place by the beginning of July, because before our budgeting for next year process happens, we need to know exactly, and the process starts in June, the budgeting process starts in June, with having to present to Treasury in August. So we're hoping to have the shared service agreement in place by the beginning of July, because that's obviously going to affect our going forward budgeting process. And we will, if the Chair at the end of the day, at the end of the meeting gives us a deadline, we will be happy to submit our implementation plan, both in terms of all the different aspects of the Act, becoming a designated department, as well as around the taking over of the DVA, because there's been quite a lot of work, and I think many can talk about that after I've gone through the questions on the DVA that we have done with regard to the DVA. I think one of the delays has been around the training. Training was done, but it actually wasn't really training. It was more presentations on what the DVA says rather than training. So we're having to go back to the provinces and relook at the training, because the complaint from the provinces after the training sessions with IPID was that it was not the kind of training they required. It was more a presentation on what the Act says, and what we really need to be doing is to look at training people to be able to do that monitoring. But I think Skuti can speak a bit more about that, about that, that process. The firearm turnaround.
Can I just ask a question? Because I think I'm confused. You're saying taking over the DVA responsibility and you becoming a designated organization or department. I'm relating that statement to the ICD, which is ICD. Between now and then, who is responsible for what?
I think I'll ask Melissa to just go into a bit more detail. Okay, I think what I'm saying is we have an implementation plan for implementing the whole act, including becoming a designated department, which includes the domestic violence, taking over the domestic violence. We can provide you with that plan, but I'll ask Melissa to just comment a bit more on the IPED Act. I think what we have negotiated with IPED around how we're going to take over the domestic violence, because initially, what happened was the day the Act came into existence, they basically just came and started delivering all their domestic violence stuff to the different provinces. And we had to intervene and say to them, look, there is a process, there's a joint forum between ourselves and the ICD and SACS, which talks about what needs to happen around us taking over the DVA. And you can't just come and dump the stuff off on us because your Act came into existence. And it was clarified, the executive director myself spoke, and it was clarified, and there was a subsequent meeting between ourselves and the ICD, which really can just comment on exactly what the processes are regarding us taking over the DVA.
Chairperson, just before you come in, that's exactly why I'm worried about the absence of target dates for even for provinces, etc., the outstanding issues around the implementation of that. The fact of the matter is, that both, in my mind, both ICED and the Secretariat have failed us in this instance. Because we said to you, we're giving you this year since adopting the Act until it comes into practice to get your houses in order. Now, it obviously hasn't happened. And we raised it with them on Monday as well. It obviously hasn't happened. Well, it definitely didn't happen in this case. But as far as I can see from the annual performance plan and the absence of this, and I've raised that question earlier as well, of the forums, targets for these forums, of the how are you going to deal with monitoring the recommendations from ICED coming back, the implementation, etc. What's going to happen around there? Those are issues that, in my mind, are the important issues in the Act that is absent in your strat plan. And what we're basically saying is that at this stage, nobody, apart maybe from the committee, is monitoring DVA and compliance with DVA. The fact of the matter is, already we told IPED that in Northwest, and the chairperson said it to them on Monday. As far as the monitoring of the DVA, ever since that legislation has been implemented, the ICD has failed Parliament in monitoring that. There's no question about it. Chair said it to them on Monday. We never had a decent report coming out in terms of it. We didn't see in all these years a change in performance from SAPS, because it doesn't help you monitor and there's no change. I mean, you monitor to affect change. And that is my concern. And we sit in, I don't know what the date is, I've lost date, 17th of April, I think, 17 days into the financial year, and we're in a problem. We're in a fix. And that upsets me a bit from ICED's response on Monday as well on this issue. So I would suggest, Chairperson, that we get the answer from Millie, but that I would request through you that you then give both ICED and the Secretariat a deadline where they've got to come back to this committee and say to us, this is what we've done, this is what we've put in place. It's a requirement of the Act.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Now, I will talk to the process that we have undertaken in terms of huge function from IPEC. What we have done is that we have drafted an MOU between ourselves and IPEC. And that MOU looks at, you know, the training that needs to take place, the communication that needs to be undertaken, and measurement. How is the DVA going to be measured from now on, and also the number of cases that the IPEC has handed over to the secretary. That is the outstanding cases that they are handing over to us. Now, and we said also last week to look at all these processes. Now, the agreement needs to be then be signed between the secretariat and the IC at the stage that it's in draft. But as the secretariat mentioned that through the transitional arrangements we had with IPEC, training has taken place in all the provinces. Training on the implementation and auditing of the DVA. But through our AUD forum, we got the message that the training is not effective. It was more like a workshop or a presentation. So we are re-looking at that. Now the plan that we have drafted with IPEC will then talk to the training, reporting, and then with the reporting, it talks to how the data is going to be collected, what tools, because at the moment what we have decided is that we would then carry on with the tools that ICD has been implementing. But the problem was that there was a problem with the quality of the ICD report, and we need to improve on that. And hence we then set up that compliance forum with SERP. Now the compliance forum will then look at the quality of those reports that are coming through. Also, what we've done is that through the reference group, we looked at the tools, and that's when we then agreed that, okay, let's continue with the current tool that is being used by IPEC, but we're also in the process of developing checklists, simple checklists that are going to be used at police station level, because what we found is that there's a lack of knowledge. You know, the recording is appalling, you know, in the registers. The police basically feel that the implementation of of DVA is a burden, you know, to them. And I remember, you know, the station commander from Vierzebrach saying that all I want to do is to shoot cops, to arrest criminals. You know, this DVA is a problem. So it's one area, I must say, and I need to confess, that gives me sleeps at night, because the SC has been in implementation for about 10 years, and still the change is not visible on the ground. And this is why then we're using civil society, which is the reference group, to assist us as to how do we then, you know, make an impact in this area. Because they are also, you know, involved at that level, at police station level. How is it that they're going to assist us? And we also then developed a plan now for the reference group to say, what is it that the reference group, what are the products that I need to come out of the reference group instead of us sitting, coming and talking about issues. And also the reference group has helped us in the development of regulations regarding DVA. So that process feeds into, you know, the development of regulations for the entire secretariat. So the other issue we looked into was the systems. We assumed that since IPEC, since they've been implementing, you know, they've been monitoring the implementation of DVA, then when they hand over to us, they will then hand over also the systems, that is the electronic systems that they're using. But basically we found out recently that it's not going to be possible. So what we've done is, again, we then went and developed in-house, you know, electronic databases for ourselves to start off, you know, capturing data for for the monitoring of this function. But as the Secretary indicated, the plan is there. we basically will then submit the plan to the portfolio committee on the date that is. Thanks.
I hear what you said, and I accept that. The thing, I just want to make a comment, not necessarily a question, Chair. I think part of the problem is, and you've, as far as I'm concerned, you've got it 100% correct, is that subsidies are administrative burden. We can say it. That's the attitude to itself. And you're going to find it exactly the same thing with the second-hand good act. It's going to be exactly the same. They're going to see that as administrative burden. Even though they initiate this legislation, they're going to see it as administrative burden. And if I can make a comment, suggestion, call it what you want, I think part of retraining SAPs on this issue would be for the Secretariat to indicate to them how it can be used as a crime-fighting tool, as informing your efforts in fighting crime, as taking note about a person that appears over and over in terms of domestic violence acts in this register. We need to focus there. Maybe our sector van needs to go around there more often. This person shouldn't be having a gun. We're going to, if he's got a firearm license, we're going to withdraw that license, et cetera, et cetera. They don't see that. And that's why they see it as a burden. And I think part of what the Secretariat, if they want to make a difference, is to in changing the attitude of SAPS to it, to illustrate to them how it can actually be a tool that they can use in prevention, in this case, of more serious crimes.
Can I just say something? I think it's not just with the domestic violence acts or second-hand goods. I think legislation, whether it be the Firearms Control Act, whether it be the Second-Hand Goods Act, whether it be the DDA Act, whether it be the Criminal Procedure Amendment Act with regard to fingerprinting, is seen as an additional burden to that. And I think that's an attitude we have to try and change around. And I'm not sure how we do it. But half the time, we've got some really brilliant legislation. That second-hand goods legislation is really amazing. The DDA legislation is amazing. The firearm legislation is comparable to the best in the world. Child Justice Act, but I'm talking about pieces that are specifically related to this department that have been even debated here in this portfolio committee, etc., and really speak to SAPS's role, and it's seen as an administrative burden. And I'm not sure how we're going to address that, but I can guarantee you that the Dangerous Weapons Act will be seen as an administrative burden. And unless we start to change the SAPS's mindset that these pieces of legislation are not only a requirement, but they're enabling. I'm still grappling with how do we change SAPS's attitude on that. I'm not sure whether they get called to the portfolio committee before legislation is adopted, and they get. I'm not sure how we deal with it, but it's not just DDA or legislation.
That's what I was saying. That was exactly what I was saying. And the point is, I think that's where the ICD over the years made the mistake. The ICD went and checked registers. So what? Now you're adding to the burden of the person that is there. The ICD didn't go and correct, not the register, the attitude in terms of what should be done. And I think the monitoring that you are going to do should be broader than just checking the register. It should include, see, even our monitoring of the domestic violence register is better than the IPIT's monitoring of it for the simple reason. We add one single question to ours. If you ask the firearms officer, the designated firearms officer, do you access the domestic violence register before you consider a application for a firearm? Just that question immediately raises there's actually a role for this act. I should actually be looking whether this person's name appears in this register or whether anybody in that household, because sometimes it's not about the person applying for the firearm, it's about other members in the household who are volatile, etc., and they shouldn't be a firearm in that household. So just by I think by trying to bring that message across in your monitoring as well, instead of just looking at registers. It's like cell ticking. They tick cells, there's problems, but so what? We tick cells, yes, scream at the police when we do, but you also tell them. The problem with this light, and it was Orkney was a prime example, I said it when we reported back that day, we had two young constables at that cell. Mr. Mawati was with me when we visited those cells. And the cells, every single cell had contraband. And contraband that could be used to attack a police officer, or to murder somebody else, or to commit suicide. And these young constables, as we went on in the first cell, and told them to remove the stuff, second cell told them to remove the stuff, got to the third cell, the constable asked me, he says, "Ma'am, why do you insist that we remove this stuff?" And then I explained to him what can be done with it. We got to the fourth cell. He started to remove the stuff himself. We didn't have to tell him to do so. He started doing so himself. Shows a lack of training, the basic training. But they pick it up at the station. They must not be trained that. But there is a bad habit at the station. And look, the comment that the secretary made in terms of acts and this committee before acts are adopted, let us remember, before you guys, the new secretariat was there, it was SAC that brings act to this committee. It was initiated by them, not by somebody outside of the police. Legal services, SAC, initiated the Firearms Control Act. Not somebody else. It wasn't done on somebody else's behalf. They would tell you we need this. The thing about that, they told us we need it. We desperately need this act. We need this. And that they were upset with us splitting the ball because we need the DNA thing. They can't even implement the fingerprinting. There's no, as you quite rightly say, they're going to look at that as an administrative burden as well.
I think it's something we need to look into and maybe come back to the portfolio committee with how we're going to approach the last issue, the question of how PAC deals with legislation, because I think it is a big problem, because there's really great legislation and it's not being dealt with. It leads on to, I think as Mr. Farrington said, we will present you with the plan, and then if you feel that there's a need for us to come and discuss it with you, we'd be happy to discuss it with you with regard to the DBA. With regard to the firearms, the Honourable, she's still in the room, we also do not agree that the backlog has been finalised, which is why there have been no comments or statements made on it. We believe that the majority of the backlog has been finalised, but that there are still outstanding applications that are being filed. And we are actually asking people who have that to let my office know. I mean, my office has received a huge number of complaints. I mean, I think the biggest number of complaints have been around firearms. And we've been able to, we've called on the associations, and we said to the associations that we've dealt with that if they have people that they know whose licenses have not been dealt with, we will deal with them. We are also working on a media strategy to that effect at the moment, even if we're calling it a kind of mop-up, because there are still people whose backlogs have not been dealt with. Although the majority, I mean, there has been a significant number of licenses, and in our engagement with the firearms organizer owners, etc., they have been quite happy with the number that we have processed, etc. But we would acknowledge that there are still some licenses. In terms of the CFR itself, however, our focus now on the CFR is on a long-term strategy. We are very involved, and I think there were meetings the whole of yesterday, which is why the Chief Director had to leave the Portfolio Committee meeting. We have basically brought in a strategic planning expert, and the Secretariat, together with the CFR, are busy looking at developing a long-term strategy. What happened was a long-term turnaround strategy for the CFR. What happened was that developed the strategy, and we didn't accept it. It was different units of that had developed different components. So we went back to the drawing board, and we brought in an expert who, surprisingly enough, is actually from SACS, but has surprised us all with his expertise, who is assisting us with the drafting of that strategic plan for the Central Firearms Registry. And if there are issues that come out of that plan that we need to then include an amendment act, we will do so. We had a workshop, I think, 2 weeks ago with all the provinces, and it was amazing at the end of 2 days to see the extent to which things like started to come on in provinces' heads and how some of them were enthusiastic. I think we're still going to have problems with some provinces. But that process, and I think if I'm not wrong, the deadline for that is the middle of April. End of April is for that strategy to be developed. And it's going to affect the organizational design of the CFR. We told the CFR that they can do whatever they want, but when this strategy comes out, this is what they're going to have to align to. So that's the situation with regard to the firearms. With regard to Mr. Mawate and attending the oversight visits and even the portfolio committee meetings, look, for us, obviously, when there are important meetings like the budget, the APPs, the annual report, it's actually important that our MNE people themselves are even here to hear what is going on and what are the issues that the portfolio committee are raising, because at the end of the day, the portfolio committee is Parliament. And if we are going to be monitoring SAPs, we need to take into account the details of what Parliament are hearing, not just get the final report that goes in the budget review report. We need to hear exactly what the portfolio committee are saying and make sure that if we're going to be involved in SAPs, with SAPs and planning going forward, if we're going to be monitoring SAPs, that those issues are addressed. When it comes to oversight visits, generally, I think the question was asked about his role. Generally, Ms. Morty reports back to us on a nightly basis with regard to what is coming out in those oversight visits. We are aware that the Portfolio Committee produce a report, but often some of the details are not in that report, and those details are important for us to be aware of. We use those reports both proactively to identify areas that we might want to focus on. That if this is now your fourth visit and we're hearing that SAP 13 stores are a mess, we might want to do a special project on the SAP 13 stores or whatever. So we do use the information that comes out of those oversight visits to identify areas that we might want to engage in. Going forward, I think once we start getting the provinces really up and running and they're almost at that stage, we would also like the provinces to be able to go back after the portfolio committee's left, which the portfolio committee might not have time to do, to check. But it's useful for us to have had somebody in those visits that knows the details of what they should be checking rather than just the report, the oversight report that goes to Parliament, which is a much broader report. So I think for us it's crucially important to have people in those visits and to be able to also pick up, even sitting in your sessions, to be able to pick up issues that are being raised in the Portfolio Committee, because at the end of the day, the Portfolio Committee is Parliament and we need to be taking seriously what they're saying in their committee meetings as well. I think I've spoken about the budget process. I've spoken about the policy on reservists. I think Mr. Zima has spoken about CPS and CSS. And we've spoken about the Tax Amendment Act as well as the input from stakeholders in terms of the white paper. And we've spoken about the reservist policy. The DDA, we've spoken about at some length. We would be happy to include our financials in the quarterly reports that we submit to the Portfolio Committee. That's not really a problem for us. If that's what the Portfolio Committee requests, that when we submit our quarterly reports to you, that it includes a financial breakdown. The National Inspectorate, for us, the National Inspectorate should be, in essence, neither the Portfolio Committee nor the Civilian Secretary for Police should be doing the kind of oversight that they're doing. The details on service delivery and command and control and issues like that. But in the absence of it not happening, we are doing that. But the Secretary's oversight should be ideally more strategic. But because things are not the way we want them to be, we are at that level. For us, the importance of the inspectorate is to look at exactly some of the issues that the chair has raised. Who is it? How is it functioning? Where is it located? What is happening to its reports? because we believe that the National Inspectorate should become the National Commissioner's basically yardstick on command and control and service delivery in the service. So basically what it comes up in the white paper, and we would like to do the necessary research to back that up. That in fact, the head of the inspectorate should report directly to the National Commissioner. And the National Commissioner should see those reports and then be held accountable for what happens with those reports. Because those reports speak to command and control. They speak to service delivery. They speak to performance management. They speak to all the issues which are actually management issues. So our research in terms of the inspectorate is basically to see that we are locating the inspectorate correctly and that they are being taken seriously enough. Because we know that there have been problems even in the quality around the inspectorate. But going forward, we need to look at where we want the inspectorate to be. Where should it be placed? Where is it? What should happen to its reports? All those sorts of things, because those reports should be an invaluable tool for SAS's management as part of management. And that's what our research is looking at. In terms of the database, I think that when we presented in August last year,
Now, I'm not sure as to whether practically that will happen or we leave it in the hands of the department to decide. I'm just saying that the deputy, you have deputy national commissioners, but not all of them report to the national commission. In fact, and such regard inspectorate as a dumping area. If you are there, you are dead. You surely must be this very. In fact, it amounts to being dumped somewhere. They don't know where to put you, therefore go to inspectorate. So it's their dumping area. I'm not sure as to what should happen and for how long should that be the case, because the challenge is that good as that office is regarded as a dumping area, the top management does not go to politicians. So they don't know what is happening. You hear as they give you the report, they feel right. And that is why there will be heated debate between ourselves and them, because they speak theory, we speak practicality, what we've seen at station level, which they don't know. And that's problem. And the unit that is supposed to probably be assisting that management to say we've seen this is regarded as a dumping area. And therefore nobody cares about the reports that they write. You know, like I'm saying, the reports that were prepared by the provincial inspectorate in Limpopo were so good. And that woman, sometimes you listen to her as she speaks, you feel, I wonder, because it has a potential to destroy a person, to be there, because nobody cares. So you dump them, period. That is why I want to believe General Shabalala will be feeling like he's been dumped today, because he doesn't see the importance of being there. That is why he's never said anything in the meeting. So that's the problem. And for how long are we going to have this? I don't know. And for how long must we continue to allow budget to go to an office that is seen to be what the inspectorate is by SAS? I don't know. I think for me, for now, it's a waste of budget. Until such time that we probably revive that office, we make SAS to see the importance of that office, and probably it asserts itself so that people take it seriously. Otherwise, for now, nobody cares.
I think that's exactly what we're aiming to do with the research and possibly even policy, and then maybe make it legislative in the SAS Amendment Act, is to look at those issues. The placement of the office, who gets employed in the office, what happens to the reports of the office, and it may, the research, but we need to base our policy on very sound research. And it may result in policy, which then results in changes to the SATS Act. Because, and looking at how internationally these different components are utilized internationally, and where they fit into the organogram internationally, is really important, because the inspectorate is not something unique to South Africa. I think the other thing we would also want to do, which isn't specific to the inspectorate, but is if you look at that, you have the inspectorate, you have the performance management chart, the performance chart, and the people managing the performance chart. You have the internal audit, and I'm not talking about the financial audit committee, I'm talking about the performance audit committee. You have an internal performance audit committee. So I think we probably may even broaden our research beyond just the inspectorate. All three of those, we get unbelievably useful information from all three of those. But then you speak to top management and they don't know what information you're talking about. But those are their structures. Those are their structures. The performance charter, and I think the chairperson, I think I came in late to a meeting where they were presenting to the portfolio committee. The amount of information that they have is quite impressive. Whether you agree with all of it or not, there's some very impressive and important information in that performance chart. And the same applies to the internal audit and inspectorate. So I think although we've listed inspectorate, we started off focusing on the inspectorate and looking at developing policy approaches to how we deal with the inspectorate, but basing that on sound research. But also we now are talking about broadening it beyond just the inspectorate, because we found that as we've got to know that and as we are engaging with that, there are other performance systems in that that are just never utilized. So I think although we still listed as inspectorate, because when we drafted this we were only focusing on inspectorate, it's now a bit broader than inspectorate. And I think ultimately we're talking about policy and legislative changes, because that's the only way we're going to deal with the dumping ground issue, the issue of reports not being taken seriously, etc. The database issue, I think when we reported to you during our last annual report, this database has been a to-ing and fro-ing process with SAPS and ourselves. I think when we reported to you last time, we said that SAPS had wanted us to go out without going on tender in our annual report, and we had said no, we weren't going to do that. We had engaged with CETA, and CETA said they could do it for us in-house, and I think the portfolio committee raised a question with us at that during our annual report presentation in August or September, whether CETA would have the capacity and that we must come back. And we have been involved with CETA in a six-month engagement, right, Millie? More than 6 months engagement, where they sent us, they could only give us the first phase. Okay, and I think this, you can maybe add.
CETA could only give us a prototype in 2 years' time. So we then, after, much consultation with them, we then decided that we would abandon that process. And we have then since developed terms of reference for the development of the data warehouse, which then includes this MNET, the National Monitoring and Evaluation Tools database, as a component of the data warehouse. Now, the process is that now, since we've done that, now we're going out on open tender.
But just to say to you, as a result, it hasn't stopped us from doing the work, because what has happened is, because of all this to-ing and fro-ing and it taking us more than 6 months to kind of finally get out of CETA that they can give us a prototype in 2 years' time. We have developed, fortunately, our chief director to charge of M&E also has IT expertise. So we have developed an in-house database, which hasn't cost us anything. It's been done through, is it Access? We've done it through the Access computer system. So she has developed an in-house database because this process has been taking so long. That doesn't mean we can't deal with information until this database comes into existence. But it has been an extremely problematic process for us, and we recognize that, but it took us almost 6 months to finally basically deal with CETA on the fact that they can't implement this process. So we accept we knew it would be a problem when we came here, and we recognize that it is a problem, but
Our difficulty is we drafted these terms of reference, but we want to make sure that the tender process is not managed completely by TSM and CETA, and we land up with another waymark type scenario. So we want to be involved in the tender process, not because we have any interest, but we want to make sure that the specs and whatever comes out of that process is, one, cost-effective, because we believe that the DOT base is not a huge, big money of 20, 30 million. We're not talking about that sort of figure. We're talking about a small amount, and we believe it can be done cost-effectively and meet our needs. And our big issue now is negotiating with CETA and TSM about where we fit into that process. So, because what happens in SAT very often is operational arm of SAT have no say in what gets finally given to them to implement, because they're not part of that process, and we're not going to accept that with ourselves. We want to know. We want to know who are the. We don't want to interfere in the tender process, but we do want to make sure that whoever gets the tender actually can do it and can do it at a cost-effective rate. So that's the issue. I'm not sure if I've left out any questions. Maybe the chair can raise, or if anybody else in my unit wants to add.
No, thank you very much. I understand that you have submitted in your targets, do you think that the budget that you have is enough and adequate to enable you to perform this?
I think that for us, most of the duties are performed in-house, which is why our personnel budget is so high. So a lot of the operational costs are basically for us to go out and do our work. So we have costed everything down to detail. As I said, the team had to cost flights for monitoring and evaluation, forum meetings and reference meetings, etc. So we do feel that the budget is, I mean, you see our personnel budget is where the big increase is. It's 45, it's jumped to 45 million. And we may not, I just need to alert the portfolio committee, because of the late sign-off of this organizational structure and the fact that the first personnel are going to be starting in May, as opposed to from the beginning of the financial year, we have all our entire staff on board. We may land up being slightly underspent from when we submitted the budget to when this was signed off on our personnel costs, but that will relate to the 2 months where we've had to advertise, because the structure, as I say, was signed off by our minister in November. Our anticipation was that we would have the full structure by the 1st of April. Now it looks like we're only going to have the entire full structure, the first part of it by May and the second part by June. So that may mean that we've already discussed that with SAP, that we may be slightly underspent on our personnel as a result of that delay. But otherwise, we're confident about our budget, with the main budget being the personnel who are going to do the work.
Thank you very much. I just want to say, because probably English-speaking people will assist me to understand the collaborators of this world. You remember yesterday when we were questioning the issue around the 300 million? The issue was that first that budget is the CJS budget, ring fenced. In 2010-11, I think they had a budget of 200 million for about 500 members, that is forensic. And then the following year, 11-12, it was 200 million for 750. And then this year, it's supposed to be 800 for 300 million. But then it was moved from forensics to detectives. And the reason was that Treasury had said that money is for compensation and it should not be for compensation. Even if the detective general responded by saying this is impacting on him because he wanted himself to use it to hire people for POP or, in fact, for stock theft units. That's what he said. So it's still compensation. Now, the answer was that no, so that it is not used for compensation. Now, I really want you to assist me here because I think I don't understand what is in here. The letter says, because we demanded that they give us the letter. The letter says, please can you examine the APP bill and make the necessary changes. Please take note of the purpose of IJS and CJS as well as the 300 million that was not allocated to personnel. This issue was raised in earlier correspondence. Please can you affect these changes on the appropriation bill database and chapter and the chapter we need to start, something like that. This is what it says, the 300 million that was not allocated to personnel. Is this saying it is wrong to allocate this money to personnel?
The difficulty here, I think, is the time frame. Is that letter saying that was not allocated, like a week ago we told you it's not allocated to personnel, you must move it? Or was it, were they told that a year ago? So it's a time frame difficulty I'm having with that sentence.
That's what it's informed to me. To me, it's not saying don't allocate. I'm not sure. But it says 300 million that was not allocated to personnel. Please take note of the purpose of IJS and CJS as well as the 300 million that was not allocated to personnel.
The point is, it says it's not allocated to personnel, so you can't use it for personnel. But the point is, nobody said to them, you must take the 300 million from this program. You could have taken it from any other program as well. You understand what I'm saying? They were told to cut, let's keep it simple, cut 300 million, argument's sake. And they allocated 300 million of CJS money to the Forensic Science Laboratory. They were then told, and that's the point I was making yesterday as well, you cannot use ring-fence funds from the CJS for personnel. That's what they were told. So they decided, okay, we've been told we must cut 300 million. Because the remainder 300 million is not the total amount that they get for the CJS. They get even more than that from the ring-fence funds. It's bigger than that. So they then decided that the easiest is to take it away from here. It's simple as that. The problem is we can't answer this question unless we also see the previous correspondence. And even if you see the previous correspondence, we're still not going to be clear on the issues because we don't know what the negotiating process was. And unless we have insight into that, and that's maybe why we must leave this issue with the Secretariat and let them come back to us on what is the full picture. You've already indicated that you are involved in this process, etc. But maybe, Chairperson, we should also give the Secretariat a copy of that letter so that they can then ask for the previous correspondence as well and get to... The problem with money is it's easy to shift around. And with such huge amounts of money, it's even easier to do so. And with the vehemence, as we previously said, and now it actually shows you, with the legal vehemence, you can shift in such... Literally hundreds of millions cannot be in trouble. So I really think we are not going to be able to resolve this issue. But what is more important is, and unfortunately that's going to put the Secretariat under pressure, is we need clarity on this issue before we go into the budget debate. Even before we finalize our budget report, we're going to need clarity on it. Because we can't go into the... We can't finalize our budget report, which needs to be finalized before we do the budget debate, unless we've resolved that issue as well. That's the unfortunate part of it.
No, it's fine. We definitely are going to make copies. However, if formal or informal, this actually might mean something different. This might actually mean something different because that is why there was Pashani decides saying this and the other one saying that. But let's leave it in the hands of the Secretariat. But also they said to us, the they're more than willing to interact with traders that will do it. And all that we said that we said we can't allow that, because surely it talks to the implementation of the criminal law for the Procedure Government Act, and we just cannot negotiate that. So the Secretary of Agency will do it.
Chair, can I clarify something? It's not that no CJS money can be used for personnel, okay? Because if you look at the criminal justice revamp, it was also about expertise. A certain amount has been allocated to personnel, and a certain amount has been allocated to technology. You cannot use the technology budget for personnel and vice versa. So it's not as if the CJS budget does not allocate anything to personnel. It does. That money cannot be cut because it is ring-fenced, it is part of the JCPA. So I think we would like a copy of that letter. We will try, I will try and see if I can see Treasury on Monday because we start going into the hearings on Tuesday. I will try and see if I can make an appointment with Treasury on Monday to clarify this issue with them, Chair.
Because I agree with you, but it might be that the amount that was allocated for personnel, we've just questioned this part. It has been used somewhere else as well. So they've overextended on the amount that they that are allocated for personnel and for specialists. However, I do think we must also be careful, Chairperson. Fact of the matter is we do not have the DNA Act yet. So we the need is there to appoint people. But because we don't have the DNA Act yet, there might also be room to say, okay, instead of appointing the 800, we're only going to appoint this year the 200. But by next year, I'm just talking numbers. I don't have the figures in front of me. Next year, we will then allocate more money for the rest of the specialists. All I'm saying is we need a comprehensive solution to this issue from when they report back to us on how they're going to deal it, so that we don't lose what we're supposed to have in the forensic science laboratories, that we can still implement the fingerprint legislation as we've passed it, but also taking in consideration that there are a gap in terms of the DNA legislation not being there yet. So we must also be careful of appointing specialists without the specialists at that stage having the act and having the jobs that they're supposed to be doing.
No, I understand. However, the whole issue about the staffing of forensic laboratories talked to quite a number of issues. Probably the DNA would have been. However, there are new forensic laboratories opened that need staffing. The whole issue about the shortage of staff in the existing laboratory, it talked to that as well. The accommodation issue, the moving towards accreditation of forensic laboratories and so on, which requires this number of staffing. So it's a whole lot. And the very thing that for 2 years, this budget has been approved, 2 financial years, only now that it becomes, and the statement for me is not suggesting that it's wrong. Because why it's wrong today, it was not wrong 2 years ago, they've used this to hire these people. And really even getting this letter from them, it was not easy with demanding. Because I don't believe it is saying what they said to us. I really don't believe it is saying that. However, let's leave it to people who can actually go deeper into this. All that we said to the department is that we're not agreeing with this move. Good as we accept the fact that detectives too, they need staff for stop theft and so on. Let them get money, but they can't then interfere with already that which is in the plan. And that was presented to the portfolio committee, and we accepted it because we think science laboratories need to be... you have people that are coming and going. You want to retain them. You want that expertise to be retained. Next thing, you are saying go because you are overworked, you are overstretched, and you are needed outside because now we are not hiring more people. So this is the whole issue about this matter, and we'll request that we look into it. Members, thank you very much. I don't believe that we still have more questions. And I want to thank the Secretariat for the presentation. We said yesterday to the department. When we meet in future, we're expecting the report that says we met, we said we're going to do this, we're going to do this, and this is what we have done, this is what we are doing, this is what we're going to do. We no longer want the language that says, as management, we are going to. We want the language that says we've done this. And we are therefore continuing to do this because already we are doing, we've done this, and we're moving towards doing it. And that is the report that we will request going forward. There are quite a number of challenges, like you've indicated, Sam. You yourself have a responsibility to play an oversight role over the Department of Police. The presentations, probably until yesterday, were quite depressing, to say the least, particularly the Wednesday one. And on Wednesday, we had a visible policy and protection services, as well as crime intelligence. I can say without any conversation that was horrible. But yesterday we were happy. You know, detective services, we really were happy. At least we got a presentation which said this is something that is happening. And of course, like we indicated, we'll be focusing on detective services as detective services, but also as a program. And therefore, the sub-programs under that will also be looked into by the portfolio committee during the course of this year. The building of police stations, the hypers, is still a nightmare. Like you've already indicated, the legislation, it's a nightmare, really. So yes, we have a mammoth task behind all of us. And together, I believe we can do more to improve that situation. To members of the portfolio committee, we therefore are meeting on Tuesday from 9:30 to late in the evening. We've accommodated that in case we are late so that we can be in a position to arrange transport and not be questioned by Parliament. We will therefore start at 9:30 for 2 hours. Our researchers in Parliament will make a presentation on summary and analysis of the bill, but also the submissions as well. And then after that, quarter to 12, we'll then have a submission, and the program, I think, has been distributed to all of us so that we can know as to which a submission to focus on during the course of this weekend. I really want to thank you for being here on a Friday. Probably we're not many committees that are in Parliament today, and we are appreciating the fact that we are here. And thank you very much. Thank you, Secretariat, for the presentation. This meeting is closed. Thank you. There is finger line GA.